classical.org.
Morning. 10 o'clock. You are listening to WHFR Dearborn. Your listener-supported non-commercial radio station. And welcome to Radiothon 2025 and another installment of Radio Vault. The fun and excitement continues, as it always does on Tuesday morning. We have got lined up for you in just mere moments a couple of episodes of Fibber McGee and Company. Now, why did they call it Fibber McGee and Company rather than Fibber McGee and Molly? Well, for a whole season or two, Molly was ill. So Fibber thought the show must go on, right? So that's what they did. They got another actor to come in, whom you'll hear in just a moment. And they renamed it Fibber McGee and Company. We'll be hearing a show from 1938. Two consecutive episodes, as a matter of fact, from 1938. Efficiency Expert in Baby Care is the first script. And then we'll be hearing the episode. You've heard the expression, well, maybe you haven't, of Starve a Cold, Feed a Fever. Well, that's kind of the topic of the second Fibber McGee show for today. Following that, we have Jack Benny's arch rival, Fred Allen, and the Fred Allen... Well, this wasn't called the Fred Allen Show at that time. It's called the Texaco Star Theater. And we will be hearing a 1942 episode of the Texaco Star Theater. And then... as if we haven't had our fill of comedy and light drama, we have got an episode of Lux Radio Theater from 1941, of course. We will be hearing the play based on the movie Craig's Wife. Once again, this is Radio Vault, what we do every Tuesday between 10 and 1 o'clock. This is Radio Vault time, which means you are free to call me at 313-845-9676, option 1, and make a pledge to donate to this here public radio station. We depend on you to keep us going and keep the lights burning, and This whole week is Radiothon week, and we'll tell you more about that as the day progresses. Don't forget, you can go to the website as well at whfr.fm. Pull down the Donate Now button, and you can make a pledge to us to keep the lights on here at WHFR. Without further ado, though, we're going back to September 20th of 1938. The Johnson Wax Program was also known as. Fibber McGee and Company.
Fibber McGee and Company with Donald Novus and Billy Mills Orchestra. The show opens with Clap Your Hands. McGee has almost convinced the president of the Gilversleeve Baby Carriage Company that he is the man to bring efficiency and profits to his business. And here, with his man Silly Watson waiting to interview Widdicombe P. Gildersleeve, we find Fibber McGee.
Listen, Sil.
Yeah?
Whatever I tell Gildersleeve, you back me up, see? Yeah. If I says I done a million of anything, you make it 2 million. You know, moral support.
Yes, I'll give you support, all right, please, but I don't believe it's real moral.
Why, Sil, did you ever know me to tell an outright falsehood?
No, sir.
You didn't? Well, after this, you pay more attention.
Excuse me, Mr. McGee, sir, but... Is you really an expert on this here deficiency stuff?
Deficiency, Sil? Deficiency is where something is lacking.
Yes, I thought of that.
Ah, there you are, McGee.
Oh, hi, Gildersleeve. This is my helper, Sylvius Watson.
Oh, good day, Watson.
Hi, Miss Gildersleeve, sir.
Well, I've been thinking this thing over, bud, and I don't think I'll take the job.
Well, why not, McGee?
Look. Suppose I built your baby carriage business up to $1 million a year.
2 million.
Yes, or 2 million. Don't you think that might go to your head a little, Gildersleeve? Have you got the strength of character to stand up under prosperity like that there?
Well, I'll do my best, McGee.
Then it's a deal. Why, I got a couple of thousand ideas that'll put you on your feet again in no time.
5,000.
Yeah. 10,000. Why, when I'm...
15,000.
Pipe down, Sil. I'll do the talking. You be as quiet as a mouse.
Yes, sir. Fire mice.
Now about salary, McGee.
Oh, tush, tush, Gildersleeve. I ain't interested in no salary till I can show results. Forget the salary. Just give me a small drawing account. Say, 500 a week,
yeah,
until we...
500 a week? McGee, that's preposterous.
Yes, I thought it was pretty prosperous myself.
Don't forget, Gildersleeve, that you're hiring the greatest master of baby psychology in America. It's the baby that uses your baby carriages, ain't it?
Yes.
All right, to satisfy the baby, you gotta get into the baby's frame of mind. You gotta think like a baby.
Well, what do you know about babies, McGee?
What do I know about babies? Why, I used to be the official baby kisser for a big politician, bud. I kissed every baby I met. Kiss Met McGee, I was known as in them days. Kiss Matt McGee, the cleverest kid caretaker to ever coax a kiddie car captain with Cracker Jack or captivate a caper-cutting carriage commander with candy cane. Keep them cuties from catching colic and common colds by cramming them with copious quantities of castor oil and coddling the cupies who canter on cock horse and calming their cries with kitschy-kitschy-coo. Cooed about and cradle and crib and considered by the kid in the three-cornered coveralls as the king of the kindergarten from Kincaid County, Kentucky to the coast of California. And that's why I says, Gildersleeve, that with an efficiency expert like me on the job, from now on your baby carriages are going to be as up-to-date as the Lambeth Walk.
The Lambeth Walk? What's that?
Oh, what? Don't you keep up with things, Gildersleeve? The Lambeth Walk is the latest dance craze. Still, ask Billy Mills to play the Lambeth Walk.
How does it happen you have an orchestra right here in the office ready to play, McGee?
Efficiency, bud. Efficiency. Take it, Billy. Of the Gildersleeve Baby Carriage Company, I am Fibber McGee, your efficiency expert. Over with a clunk. Now, I don't want any of you to worry about your jobs. I ain't firing nobody. On the other hand, I'm installing a few new novel ideas that'll interest you. Now, for instance, hey, you there, bud. Step over there and punch that time clock.
Okay.
Now, you, sis. And you, bud. Jackpot! You see, folks, now punching the time clock will be more interesting. Mr. Gildersleeve, will you state briefly what I'm going to attempt to do with this factory?
Yes. Folks, Mr. McGee here...
Thank you, Gildersleeve. Very well put. Now, fellow workers, I'm putting this factory on a child psychology basis. I want you all to get in the habit of thinking as a baby thinks. Only in that way can we turn out a baby carriage that a baby likes. Don't think in terms of beer and sandwiches for your lunch. Think of cod liver oil and mashed carrots. And one more thing, fellow workers. Remember, I'm here to help you, not to hinder you. So if any of you have any ideas, my door is always open.
Shut your mouth.
Who said that?
I said, you want to make something out of it?
Shucks, no, bud. Glad you spoke up. I don't want no yes men around me. Well, that's all, folks.
Cablegram for you, Doc.
Thanks, boy. From England. It says, Gildersleeve perambulator you sent too small. My infant son, Sir Wilford Which Twitch, will not fit into it. Signed, Lord Which Twitch.
Any answer?
Yes, cable him saying, oh, Lord, you made the night too long.
send it now, Dopey. I gotta go get a haircut.
You can't go get a haircut on company time.
No, it grew on company time, didn't it?
Still, take a memo.
Listen here, McGee.
Huh?
Aren't you going a bit too far with this child psychology business?
What you mean, Gildersleeve? After all, it's a baby.
I mean with all these devices to put our workers in a childish frame of mind. Mind you, I didn't say anything when you ordered the punch press operators to wear rompers. And I held my tongue when you told the office boys they must creep from room to room on the floor. But by George, McGee, I'll not stand for pacifiers on the drinking party.
No. Chuck, Gildersleeve, calm down. Take it easier.
McGee, I don't know whether you're a genius or a crackpot, but I have my suspicions.
You hear that, Sil? He suspects I'm a genius.
Hello there, Fibber. How's the infant flavor business?
Marvelous, Harlow. Just now I'm working on a miniature yellow cab for Chinese babies. What's on your mind, Harlow?
Well, look, let's put one of these bright-colored nursery rhymes in each baby carriage you deliver.
Well, let's see one.
All right, yeah. Oh.
Listen to this, Sil. Peter, Peter, pumpkin eater, had a wife who couldn't be neater.
There you are. How'd you like it, Fibber?
I don't know, Harlow. That meter seems to kind of walk along with one foot in the gutter. But I'll take it up with the advertising manager, Harlow.
Okay, I'll wait.
I'll say you will. Now, let's see. What was I doing when that...
Say, Mr. Fibber, listen to me.
What's the matter, bud?
Look, I think you carried this baby stuff a little bit too far.
Yeah?
The former of the assembly plant, he just broke his leg.
Broke his leg? How?
He was trying to put his toe in his mouth.
Oh! I know you now. You're Donald Novus. Where'd you get that dialect, Don?
Oh, I picked it up down in old Mexico.
Mexico, eh? Tell me, do they use Johnson's down there for whacking their floors?
See. They are quite excited about it.
Well, what you going to sing, Don?
How about if there is someone lovelier than you?
Oh, great. If there is someone lovelier than you. Go ahead, Don.
Every day is a brand new day. The moment that you go away, no sun will shine. Your love is my reward. Each night I thank the Lord. Tell me till time is done, we'll be one.
Nice going, Don. That was beautiful. Hey, Sil.
Yes, sir.
Anybody to see me?
Yes, the old gentleman was.
Hello there, Johnny.
That's him.
Hi, old-timer. What's on your mind?
Hey!
I says, what can we do for you? I make it snappy because, as the cowboy says when he got through off his horse, this is my dizzy bay.
That's pretty good, Johnny. But that ain't the way I heard it. The way I heard it, one feller says to the other feller, see, says, I see where this here Carol Lombard says she's very happy to pay a big income tax. Is that so, says the other feller? Sorry, I can't finish that joke, Johnny. The government took the payoff. Ain't that a dilly?
The only reason he pulls them jokes is they're too weak to go along by themselves.
Excuse me, Miss McGee. Here, Mr. Gildersleeve again.
Listen, McGee, where is this going to end anyway?
Now, take it easy, Gildersleeve. What's the matter now?
What's the matter? Yes. I just went through the factory, and I had to stop 4 games of marbles, 3 games of hopscotch, and then I found the chairman of the board flying a kite in the shipping yard. Is that your idea?
Now, hold it. Hold it. Quit waving your eyebrows at me and calm down. Do you realize what I've done for our Indian trade out west?
I didn't even know we had any Indian trade.
Oh, of course you didn't. Look, Gildersleeve, from time immemorial, them Indians have been carrying their cabooses on their backs.
You mean porpoises.
That ratted, I mean Indian babies. So I'm starting a campaign in the Indian territory. Big posters that says, quote, you can watch your papoose in the Gildersleeve hack, but how do you know what he's doing behind your back? Unquote. As I always said...
He seemed real upset about something, didn't he?
Oh, well. New ideas come pretty painful to some people, so.
Excuse me, please, Mr. McKibben.
Oh! Frida Smarts. Hi, Frida. What can I do for you?
I would like to buy a foggy carriage, please.
Oh. A baby carriage, eh?
Yeah,
for
no.
Yourself?
Yeah, no. You go on. I'm too big. It's for a baby.
Oh, of course, for a baby. I knew that. What size baby carriage did you want to buy?
What size? Listen, babies is babies. All babies is little. One size is too big for every one of them.
Well, I'll grant you that, Frida, but suppose this happens to be twins or triplets.
Wait, please, quiet. The baby is already born, and he is not triplets. He is just one baby.
But I didn't know you were married, Frida.
Please, I am not married.
Why, Frida?
The carriage is for the new baby of my sister. Now, please, Mr.
Okay. Glad to show you the complete line, Frida. Now, as long as it's a boy, I suggest you get a pink carriage.
Excuse me, please, but pink is not being the boy. The boy is blue.
He is? Have you tried spanking him? Maybe he's holding his breath too long. Maybe he's cold.
Please, just I am saying that pink is not being the color for boy babies. Pink is girls.
Oh, I think you're wrong there, Frida. It's pink for boys and blue for girls.
It is nothing of the kinds. It is boys for girls and pink for blue.
You sure it ain't girls for boys and blue for pink?
Please, I am absolute. It is punk for glue. It is boils for guys. Do my yodel. I can't make you understand. I quit.
Excuse me, Miss McGee, but ain't it about time we were selling some baby carriages?
Oh, don't worry about that.
Say, Fibber.
Oh, you again, Harlow.
Yes, and I've got another great idea.
Yeah?
Look, you've got 52 weeks with Blowcoat and only one with Gildersleeve.
Hey, old Harpo's right at that, ain't he?
Yep. It's
about time I realized, I guess, which side my linoleum was Johnsoned on. Hey, Sil. Take a memo, Sil.
Yes, sir. What to?
To all employees, please cease work immediately when the whistle blows. The period immediately following will be used to to listen to Billy Mills and the Four Notes playing and singing William Tell. Tell him, William.
Back when we were taught to spell in the schoolhouse by the Dell, how we children used to dwell on the mighty William Tell. King was in his coach one day, riding along and all was gay. He hung his hat up in the square, so everyone could see it there. He said, bow down and all went well, till down the street came William Tell. He thumbed his nose at the old king's hat, said he, I'll never bow down to that. The king, as you know, didn't like his action. Da-da-da-da-da-da, cause Billy Tell drove him to distraction. The king was nonplussed, with this problem he did grapple. Till he came upon this business of the apple. Do, 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 do. The king took William's only son, placed an apple all in fun on the little, little fellow's head. Now shoot it off, he said. William Tell, as you all know, slowly drew his trusty bow, fixed an arrow in the string, and then he laughed at the king. To the surprise of the population, he treated their eyes to a demonstration. Believe it or not, William shot that apple. It was the king hot when he got that apple.
Said William Tell,
what did he say?
All is well.
Well, okay.
King just sneered
while the crowd cheered.
Hooray!
It turned out to be William's day of glory. And happy, you see, made this rhythm story. Suppose that William Tell had missed, this could have a different twist. We could not put this across, cause it would be, oh, it would be, this story would be apple song.
That's very fine, kids. Now, let's see, I gotta get this.
Oh, Miss McGee.
Hey, ain't you supposed to be working in the upholstery department, Miss Abercrombie?
Well, sure, but I wanted to ask you if I could hurry up and do my work. Can I go out and play?
No, you can't go out and play. After all, we gotta get some work done here, you know.
Well, gee, will you take me to the circus then if I'm a good girl?
No, I will not. You're too big a girl to be begging for circuses and stuff like that there. Now, go on back to work.
Carry me.
No, I won't carry you. You walk. Here. Be quiet. Quit crying. Here, here's a nickel for ice cream cone. Now go on back to work. Looks like my baby psychology is beginning to take a hold. Now, if I can only
McGee, I've had about enough of this.
Huh?
Do you realize that our punch press operators have quit stamping out body parts and are turning out nothing but paper dolls? Do you realize...
Now, wait a minute, Gildersleeve. I can explain
all this. Well, hello there, Fizzer. What is this about? I hope nobody is losing his distemper. Remember, always lose your temper before you count to ten.
Oh, no, Nick. I was just discussing business with Mr. Gildersleeve here. Gildy, this is Nick DePopulos.
I am very happy to have you know my acquaintances, Mr. Gildypuss.
How do you do? Now listen, McGee.
Fizzer, I have just been reading the most sweetest little delightful stories that has ever run across me.
Oh, that's all.
It is beginning with a little girl who is having the name of Cinder Umbrella. And her old stepladder...
Stepmother. But please, Nick, tell me later. I've heard all about Cinderella and the Seven
Dwarfs. Well, sir, when the Cinderella's old step-cupie is telling her she can't go to the prince's jam session, who is appearing on the scenery but a godly fairmother?
You mean a fairy godmother? But please, Nick, I've...
Well, sir, with one downbeat with a magical stick and a poke in the hocus, she is trading in a big pumpkin for a beautiful stagecoaches. Those godly fair mothers is certainly knowing her vegetables, I'm thinking.
Yes, yes, yes. And then she turned some rats into horses and gave Cinderella a beautiful dress and she went to the ball.
Oh, it is no fair looking in the back of the book, Fizzer. But the goodly fair mother is telling Cinder Umbrella she is having to scram home at 12 o'clock or everything will change back to what I'm being before it is like it is when I'm talking about it. But before she is leaving, what is happening but she is losing one of the little glass slippers, which was quite a calamity.
Please, Nick, never mind the rest. We gotta get...
And now is coming the parts of the story which is the most rabbit breeding.
Hair-raising.
Sure. And when the prince is finally hiring a detective force to find her, and when he is seeing her again... He is saying, try on this little glass slippers, cute kiddo. And if you're not being a flat-foot floozy, I think I'm marrying you. And she did, and she wasn't, and he did, and she is very happy being married to a royal highball.
Royal Highness.
Have it my way. And the prince? The prince is saying, you are a pretty dumb Cupid, baby, not to be knowing your stepmama is an old battle horse, because anybody who is wearing a glass shoe should be able to see through a heel. Well, so long, because I was the one.
I'm sorry he interrupted us, Gildersleeve.
You ought to be glad he interrupted.
Huh?
You know what you've done, McGee.
What?
You've turned this whole factory into a blinkety-blank nursery. You've got our whole force acting like a bunch of one-year-olds. Listen, McGee, wipe off your chin. Now, I don't know why I ever listened to your wild theories. I don't know why I ever... What's the matter with you, anyway? Take your thumb out of your mouth. Now, look. Do you realize that we have 18 workers gone home with a colic? 23 of our best men are cutting new teeth? And 7 of them have swallowed safety pins? You and your child psychology, what have you got to say for yourself? McGee, what have you got to say for yourself?
Da-da.
Fibber will be back in just a moment.
Don't forget to watch your newspapers next week for differences in radio listings. You know, some localities are affected by the daylight savings changes.
Oh, and Fibber.
What you want, Hartle?
Don't forget to set your watch back an hour next Sunday.
Next Sunday?
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Why not?
Pawn shops ain't open on Sunday. Good night, folks.
Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Glow Coat at Racine, Wisconsin, inviting you all to be with us again next Tuesday evening. Good night.
Lambeth Walker tonight. This is a production, Me and My Girl. My heart is unemployed from Sing Off the News. This is the National Broadcasting Company. This is WMAQ Chicago.
We're a non-commercial radio station and have been since 1985. We cannot, by law, run commercials. Thus, we must rely on support from local businesses and from you, our loyal listeners. And with your support, we can continue to give you an alternative to the noise. Make your pledge of support now. Call 313-845-9676 or go online to www.whfr.fm.
Fibber McGee and Company with Donald Novis and Billy Mills Orchestra. The show opens with What Goes On Here in My Heart. Shake off a bad cold. And having heard the old adage, starve a cold and feed a fever, he's a little weak from hunger. And here, slowly walking down the street at 14th and Oak, Wistful Vista, with his helper, Silly Watson, we find Fibber McGee.
Phil, do you realize that I ain't at nothing for the last 4 days?
Yes, but if you can just keep it up for a while, so you're sure going to knock that cold in the head.
Somebody ought to knock me in the head before I started this thing. Starve a cold and feed a fever. I'll bet whoever made that rule had a fever and not a cold.
Don't you feel no better, Mr. McGee?
I don't know, Phil. I'm so dad-dratted hungry, I don't know how I feel.
Excuse me, buddy.
Well, what you want?
Will you give me a dime for a cup of coffee?
But I'll give you a dollar for a cup of coffee. Where is it?
Where's what?
Where's the coffee? Give me a couple of donuts with it, and I'll make it a dollar and a quarter.
All right, wise guy, all right.
Well, he wasn't selling coffee, please, so he wanted to buy some.
Well, he ain't got nothing on me. Hey, there's a fruit stand, Sil.
Whatever, please. See, you ain't gonna bust up your diet now, are you?
Well, no, I guess not. But here, take hold of my hand. I'm gonna close my eyes as I walk past that stand. Yes. That's it. Are we past it, Sil?
Yes, but you better shut your eyes again. We're coming past the bakery now.
Oh, gee whiz. Sil, let me look in the window. Oh, boy. Look at them cream puffs.
Sir, were you addressing us?
No, I wasn't.
Well, it's a good thing for you, you ruffian. Come on, Chauncey.
Hey, Sil, don't you think my cold is enough better so as I could eat a couple of them cookies in there?
Did you smell this little old bakery as we was coming along?
No, why?
And you ain't enough better, Mr. McGee. You ain't got no sense of smell.
Anybody doing radio gags these days can't afford to have a sense of smell. You know, it must be wonderful to be born a moth and have nothing to do all day but sit around and munch on a nice herringbone sport coat.
Ain't you talking kind of delirious, please?
Well, maybe I am, but so would you if you've been putting yourself to sleep for 4 nights counting lamb chops jumping over a gravy boat. Shucks, I'm so... Oh, hi, Harlow.
Hello, Fibber. Say, what's the matter with you?
What you mean?
You look sort of woebegone.
He is kind of goby-warm. On account he ain't been eating nothing.
I got a cold, Harlow, and I'm trying to get rid of it by starving. You know, the old saying, starve a cold and feed a fever.
Why, that isn't how it goes. It's feed a cold and starve a fever.
What? It is?
Why,
you sure?
Why, certainly. Feed a cold and starve a fever.
Well, for the... And here I've been starving myself. Hey, Sil, let's run back to that bakery. Listen, Harlow, you're sure about that now, ain't you?
Why, certainly. Just ask the first person you meet.
Okay. Oh, pardon me, lady. Could you tell me...
No, I'm a stranger here myself.
I'll try this guy. Hey, but... Oh, it's Billy Mills.
Hello, Fibber. What's the matter? Hello, well, Harlow. Hello, Silly.
Listen, Billy, will you settle a question for me?
Sure.
What's that saying about a cold and a fever?
Oh, that? It's starve a cold and feed a fever.
Hot dog. Wee! Let's... carve a what and feed a what, say, Billy?
I said the saying is starve a cold and feed a fever.
Say, oh. Billy's right, Fibber. It is starve a cold.
Oh.
Hey, grab him, Silly. He's going to faint.
Shall we call you a cab, Fibber?
No, just call me a darn fool for ever starting this crazy idea. Take it, Billy.
Thank you.
orchestra. Playing a peppy little number, don't cross your fingers, cross your heart. I feel like I double-crossed my stomach. Hey, Silvius, ain't there anything in the house to eat?
Yes, but you can't have none. Remember, starve a cold and feed a fever.
Shucks. There ought to be some way out of this. Say, ain't a cold a form of hay fever? And hay fever's a fever, ain't it? And you're supposed to feed a fever. Throw a steak on the stove, Sil.
I'm going to be responsible, sir, if you have a real laugh. You promise you're going to stick to starving your cold.
Oh, come in.
Oh, hello, Mr. McGee. Remember me?
Oh, yeah, you're Mrs. Fiditch's little girl.
That's right. Mama heard you had a bad cold, so she sent you over this bowl of caramel custard.
Oh, say, this is swell, sis, but I guess I'll have to set it aside for a while. I'm on a diet, you know, the old saying, starve a cold and feed a fever.
Oh, but that isn't right, Mr. McGee. It's feed a cold, starve a fever.
It is? Hey, Sil, give me a big spoon and a napkin.
Oh, but wait a minute. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it is starve a cold and feed a fever.
Rat it, sis. Make up your mind, will you? Can't you see I'm just trembling from hunger?
Oh, dear, isn't it exasperating? But I think I was right the first time. It's feed a cold. That's it, feed a cold.
Well, of course it is. Sit down, sis, so you can tell your mama how much I enjoyed this custard. What's the matter?
I'll bet I'm wrong. It's starve a cold.
Yes, ma'am, that's what it is, Aura.
You stay out of this, Sil. Let her decide.
Oh, I've decided. It's starve a cold. Oh, I'm so sorry to upset you, Mr. McGee. I'll take the custard back. Goodbye.
Well, Sil, she took the custard back.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. I'm going to give this whole thing up. Give me something to eat, Sil.
No, you can't have nothing.
Say, who appointed you my guardian?
You did, please, sir.
Huh?
You say if and I ever see you busting your diet to smack you down.
Yeah, but you wouldn't really do that, would you?
Mr. McGee, I think so much of you that if it's going to help you any, I'll poke you right in the nose.
My pal. Well, there's nothing like a nice little affectionate kick in the teeth now and then. Hey, Sil.
Yes, sir?
Look out the window. Looks like somebody's moving in next door there.
Yes, sir, there is. And there's the man that's going to live there.
You mean that big guy with the black beard there?
Yes, he looked like a professor or something. Maybe a doctor. He's carrying a little black bag.
A doctor, eh?
Yeah.
Right next door, too. Say, maybe I could do something about that. I might call on him in a friendly, neighborly way and get some free medical advice.
Why don't you go to your own doctor?
Why, shucks, this guy'll do it for nothing. If I handle it right, I'll be a good neighbor. You catch on to it? Drop in on him kind of casually and during the conversation, casually mention my symptoms. Then casually, I ask him what he usually does in a case like mine.
And casually, he soaks you $5.
Oh, he won't never do no such a thing. At least he won't if he's a good neighbor.
Say, Fibber.
What you want, Harlow? And quit nibbling that chocolate bar in front of me. You know I can't eat.
Oh, I'm sorry. But look, I hear you've got some new neighbors moving in next door.
That's right, but I don't see...
Well, look, do you think they're the right kind of people? Socially, I mean. Are they from the right side of the tracks?
Now, listen here, Wilcox. This is a democratic little community.
No. Look, if they use Johnson's wax on their floors, it doesn't matter because, in that case, there aren't any tracks. You see, it protects floors against all kinds of...
Okay. They use Johnson's all right, Harlow. I seen him unload a large-sized can from the moving van.
Yeah? Economical people, too, eh? Mm. Well, that's all I want to know, pal.
Right side of the track. Well, hey, Sil, we can switch back to the main line now. The commercial just went past. Ain't there anything in the house to eat, Sil?
No, sir.
Say, there was a chicken in the icebox a couple of days ago.
Yeah, I know it. But I was afraid it'd spoil while you was on your diet.
So what'd you do with it?
Well, I ain't on no diet.
This is a fine how-do-you-do. Starve a McGee and feed a Watson. Sil, I'm going next door and see that doctor. I'm not...
Well, I better go along with you.
Why, Sil, don't you trust me?
Oh, yes, sir. I trust you okay, Mr. McGee. But your appetite is real treacherous.
Okay, we'll go call on the doctor. Nothing like being a good neighbor anyway. Get my hat, Sills.
Yes, sir.
And my coat.
Yes, sir.
And my muffler.
Yes, sir.
And Billy Mills. Play for Donald Novus to sing You Go to My Head.
Yes, sir.
What?
I mean, okay.
Well, come on, Sills. Go ahead, Don.
You go to my head and you linger like a haunting refrain, and I find you spinning round in my brain like the bubbles in a glass of champagne. You go to my head like a sip of sparkling burgundy brew, and I find the very mention of you like the kicker in a julep or two. The thrill of the thought that you might give a thought to my plea cast a spell over me. Still I say to myself, get a hold of yourself. Can't you see that this never can be? You go to my head with a smile that makes my temperature rise like a summer with a thousand Julys. You intoxicate my soul with your eyes, though I'm certain that this heart of mine hasn't a ghost of a chance in this crazy romance. You go to my
beautiful. Hey, Don, why don't you take off that sombrero and your spurs and stay while I run next door and see the new doctor?
Well, I can't do this, Mr. Fever. I don't think there should be so many people around. You are not so good looking.
What do you mean, I ain't so good looking?
Oh, I mean you're not looking so good.
Well, I ain't feeling so bad either, Don. I've been hungry so long, even the tongue on my belt buckle is drooling.
Well, I hope you feel better by the first part of last week.
You mean the first part of next week? You're kind of getting your calendar mixed up.
Oh, no, Mr. Fever. The calendar is very familiar with me.
Oh, yeah? You know how many days in the different months?
Oh, see. 30 days Hacienda, April, June, and Sombrero. All the rest have 31 except my brother. He got 10 days for speeding.
More dialects on the show, and we'll have to have our contracts approved by the League of Nations. Well, come on, Phil. Let's go next door and get a little free medical advice. I feel terrible.
You sure do look bad.
Yeah.
You look like something the dog dragged in.
You mean the cat dragged in?
No, the cat is more particular than the dog.
Hello there, Johnny. Want to buy a nice fresh fruit cake? Just made fresh.
No, Dad, rather I can't eat fruit cake. I'm starving to cold.
Me?
I says I'm starving to cold. So to tell the truth, the cold is doing all right, and I'm doing the starving.
That's pretty good, Johnny. But that ain't the way I hear it. The way I heard it, one feller says to the other feller, see where the latest thing in woman's styles is the old-fashioned hook skirt. Think they'll last? Why not, says the second feller. The corset had quite a stay. Hope my grandmother ain't listening in, Johnny. She'll box my ears.
Trying to sell me a fruitcake. and me emptier than a political promise.
Say, Fibber.
You back again, Harlow. What you want now?
Listen, I just thought of a cute idea.
Yeah?
You know, Jack Benny is coming back to the air Sunday night.
Yes, I know that.
Well, look, why don't you send him a telegram?
Huh?
Something like this. Welcome back, Jack.
Welcome.
How's Kenny Baker? Regards to Mary Livingston. Regards, Fibber McGee.
I don't get it, Harlow. What's the idea of putting in all that stuff about glow code in there?
Well, look, suppose he reads that wire over the air. Think how pleased our sponsor will be.
Yeah, I know, but how about his sponsor? How'll he like that?
His sponsor? Oh, has he got a sponsor now? Oh, well, I'm sorry. Well, I'll think up another idea.
Wonder if Harlow's heard about Henry Ford building a factory to make horseless carriages. Sometimes I wonder...
Excuse me, please, I hear your hat and coat.
Oh, thanks, Phil. Well, let's go call on the doctor next door.
Well, why are you going to see him, Mr. McGee, sir? If you go to a doctor, why don't you go to your own?
And pay out good money just to clear up a little cold? Look, Sil, I'll pull the good neighbor act with this new guy, and he'll probably give me a lot of free advice. You see? Come on. I hope he tells me I need nourishment, Sil.
I'm sorry, sir, but you know the saying, starve a cold and feed a fever.
Yeah, I know. But just because it's an old saw, do I have to cut my throat with it? Oh, hello there, sis.
Well.
What you eating?
Bread and jelly,
huh? It looks real good.
Cheers.
Cheers, eh? How about giving Uncle Fibber a bite? I'll give you a nickel.
No.
Oh, come on. You don't want to be a selfish little girl, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Just a nibble.
No.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
Please don't cry, little girl. He ain't really going to take a bite. Ain't you ashamed? She's scared you're going to grab it away from her.
Yeah, I kind of had me scared for a minute there. Oh, well, let's get this over with. You wait out on the porch here, Sil, while I go in and see the doctor.
Yes, so what I going to do to amuse myself with?
Oh, you can listen to the four notes singing Dixieland Band. Play for that silly Billy.
Let me tell you, brother, that the music was grand. They had a piano and a clarinet. Only thing they needed was a second cornet. And that's what led to the ruin of the Dixieland Band. When the folks would holler for the maple leaf rang, they would get to swinging, but the trumpet was rang. They had to keep him cause he played so sweet, but they needed someone who could give him the beat. Someone who swung with the rhythm of the Dixieland Band. He plays so sweetly. Instead of playing swing, he la da 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 da. He plays so sweetly. They'd be saying while he's playing da 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 da. Sure enough, he got him so they couldn't play right. Finally, he fixed him on a Saturday night. He hit a figure that was off the course. Apoplexy got him and they went to the Lord. And that's the pitiful story of the Dixieland Band. Now they're in heaven, happy at last. Found a trumpet man who really can blast. The way he swings him is an awful shame. He can really do it, Gabriel's his name. And now, folks, here is a sample of that band.
Ain't left on any calls yet. I gotta know whether I can eat while I'm...
Oh, hello there, Fizzer. Where are you going with such a hungry look on your physiognomy?
Now, don't detain me, Nick. I'm a sick man. I'm calling on our new neighbor here. He's a doctor.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Well, I'm never forgetting the last times I'm lying back on my flat in a horse print. Fizzer, I'm having myself a sickness which I am not knowing what is wrong with me, and I'm going there for observation while the doctor is making a diagram nasty puss.
You mean mean a diagnosis, but please, Nick, I'm afraid the doc will get away
before... Well, sir, Fizzer, as it is turning out, there was nothing being the matter with me, except I'm having a bad case of roof slats.
Roof slats? Roof... Oh, shingles.
Sure. Sure, and then what are they doing to me but tuning in on my wishbone with a stethoscope? And the doctor is having earmuffs on, and he's listening to something, and I'm saying, if you are listening to a fireside speech, doctor, don't kid myself. That is just heartburn.
I know, Nick, but please, I'm in a hurry. This
boy... Well, sir, Fisher, then a pretty little cupid is coming in with a hot water bottle, and she is saying, Mr. DePopulos, do I think you can keep this on your stomach? And I'm saying, cupid, I'm saying... I don't even think I can eat it.
No. She didn't mean that. She just meant the fish.
And then what is happening? They are saying I must have my jonquils out.
Your tonsils. But please, Nick, I ain't got time
but
to listen.
But with that, Fisher, I am making a scranny puss objective. I'm not needing my jonquils out, and that was done. So just then, I'm looking up and saying, what is this, the parchments of the hospital, pupae? And the nurse is saying, we are being a little short-handed with room, Mr. DePopulos, so we are having to put you in a fraternity ward.
You mean maternity.
Sure, but they are not doing that to me, Fizzle. Anyway, I'm going away from those places like a dose of lightning. I'm too old to be a mother again at my age. I'm being...
Fine lot of sympathy I get when I'm sick. Shucks, oh well. I hope this doc comes across with that free advice.
Yes?
Oh, hi, Doc. I'm Fibber McGee, your next-door neighbor.
Oh, yes. I'm glad to know you. Won't you step in?
Thanks, Doc. Just a friendly call, Doc. Just wanted to be a good neighbor, you know.
Well, well. That's very friendly of you, McGee. Oh, by the way, my name is Densmore.
Well, I'm glad to know you, Doc. Anything I can do to help you move in or anything?
Oh, no, thank you. We're pretty well organized now.
That's fine. I just wanted to be a good neighbor, you know. Mind if I sit down, Doc? I'm kind of weak.
Oh, is that so? Yeah. Oh, that's too bad. Nothing trivial, I hope.
Following that old wheeze about starve of cold and feed a few. It's a nice looking basket of fruit you got there on the table.
Oh, yes, yes, it is, isn't it? Wonderful what they can do with wax these days.
Quiet, Doc, you'll have Wilcox busting in here again. Boy, am I weak. I ain't had a good meal in a week, Doc. I feel awful.
No, you don't look very well.
No, I don't at that, do I?
No, you don't.
Everybody says I look terrible.
They're right, you do.
Yeah, I guess I do at that.
Yes, you do.
What do you usually do in a case like mine, Doc?
Well, I don't know, I'm sure. Well, you'll have to excuse me, McGee. I have a few professional calls to make.
Now, wait a minute, Doc. I thought that in as much as we were neighbors and all, Dad ratted, Doc, are you going to stand there and watch a fellow human being suffer like this? Ain't you got any professional ethics?
Ethics?
Yes, ethics. Dad ratted, if you have to, I'll pay you. But open up that little black bag of yours and give me a pill or something. I feel terrible. A fine doctor you are.
Doctor? I'm not a doctor.
I'll say it. Huh? You ain't?
No, I'm a piano tuner.
Oh, God.
Fibber will be back in just a moment, but in the meantime...
Mr. McGee, that old starve a cold and feed a fever don't work out so good, do we?
Oh, I know it, Sil. Dad read it. Seers and soothsayers always was my downfall. Why, even as a boy, I was a sucker for a seer. Seer Sucker McGee, I was known as in them days.
Hold on a second.
Seersucker McGee, the super sap of the century, sacrificing succulent servings of savory soup and summer sausage to satisfy some soothsayer's silly slogan, saying starve till stiff to stop a sniff, scoffing at safe and sane scientific certainties, but a sucker for senseless superstitions like spilling salt or seeking a slug of slumber by sorting sheep, soft soaped by every sappy so-and-so in the solar system and selected by society as a sultan of suckers from the side streets of Cincinnati to the seaside sampans of Singapore.
Good night, folks.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are very happy to announce that next week we shall have as our guest star Miss Zazu Pitts. This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Glow Coat, Racine, Wisconsin, inviting you all to be with us again next Tuesday night at this same time. Good night.
Heard on this evening's show, the selection What Goes On Here in My Heart from Give Me a Sailor and the tune Confidentially, which is from Garden of the Moon. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
And that is my cue to say hello to you. And you are listening to Radio Vault on WHFR, Dearborn. We have just heard another installment of Fibber McGee and Company. That was from, November 27, 1938. Starve a cold, feed a fever, or something like that. Let's continue now with the Fred Allen Show, shall we? This one's a little bit scratchy, but you'll enjoy it. From 42.
Time with Fred Allen. Welcome to the Texaco Star Theater, ladies and gentlemen, and to a performance that marked a milestone in Texaco history, the 40th anniversary of the Texas Company. 40 years of progress in petroleum products, now so vital to the American cause. Tonight, we invite you to enjoy the next 60 minutes with Fred Allen, Kenny Baker, Portland Hopper, our special guest, Victor Moore, star of Paramount's Louisiana Purchase, the winner of the Texaco College Competition, Miss Charlene Posgay from Duquesne University at Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Al Goodman's orchestra. An hour of mirth and melody brought to you by the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet the man who appeared on the Quiz Kids program last Wednesday and learned a lot of things his mummy never done told him. And here he is, Fred Allen in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And Jimmy, when you say I learned a lot of things from the Quiz Kids last Wednesday night, you are not exaggerating. Do you know that little Gerard is so smart, he has to sleep with his head between bookends? Little head is square up on top. I asked him, and he told me he sleeps.
No kidding, is that right?
Yes, that's right. All the kids agreed, though, Jimmy, that I was the most intelligent guest they had ever had on the program.
Oh, yes, I know. They told the same thing to Jack Benny when he was on their program last year.
Oh, that's ridiculous, Jimmy. Benny had, when Benny went on the Quiz Kids program, he cheated. Benny had Einstein under his coat. One of the kids. And the reason they knew that he had Einstein under there was that all of the answers during the program, all of Benny's answers came out of a buttonhole in his vest. And they looked in there. They thought he had hair on his chest, but it was Einstein in there. speaking of J.B., did you hear his program tonight, Jimmy?
No, I didn't, Fred. What happened?
You didn't hear the program? Oh. Well, the program opened up at a fast clip, Jimmy. Oh. Don Wilson came on and spoke nicely, spoke highly, rather, at a fast clip about cola Jell-O. The program was very good up to there. And then, of course, Benny came on, and there was a letdown after the commercial, naturally. Benny came on and told how his suspenders broke in the Easter parade out there in Hollywood, and his trousers were lowered to half-mast, you see. And it seems that that he had on the bloomers from Charlie's aunt from the picture. He was still wearing these bloomers, you see. It must be very funny, because on a man like Benny, it's hard to tell where a bloomer starts, where a bloomer leaves off, and Benny starts. I mean... But he has to wear... Did you ever see Benny's legs, confidentially?
No, frankly, I haven't.
You haven't?
No.
Well, they look like two swan's necks with no down on them. And... Benny is the first man to ever wear stockings with built-in calves. He is the inventor. Built-in cat. Well, then the program went along. I made some notes here. He spoke disparagingly about my appearance with the quiz kids. He said that when he was on the program, he sat right with the kids and answered the questions, and I was the quiz master. Well, the truth of the matter is that on the program, the kids wanted Benny to be the quiz master, but when he got over there, they found out that he couldn't read the questions, so they had to take him and put them with him to... And then later on, he did a whole routine about that I had no teeth, you see. Yes. Mr. Benny said that I had no teeth at all. And now to fling the lie into Mr. Benny's gums at the moment, to prove, ladies and gentlemen, from here to California that I have teeth, I am going to eat over this network from coast to coast a piece of celery, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Mr. Benny, let's hear from you. Well, that's about all there was. There is a man, Jimmy. Benny not only has no teeth of his own, he's too cheap to buy false teeth. He enamels his gums. That's about all there was to the program, Jimmy. I guess you're sorry you brought the whole thing up.
Yes, frankly, I am. I only mentioned Jack Benny to make conversation.
Well, I know. And before you get a chance to say anything more, Jimmy, I think I'd better turn to the latest news of the week. The March of Trivia presents its weekly lowlight from the world of news. Washington, D.C., War Production Board, in an effort to stretch the nation's available tea supply to 1 year's consumption, orders 50% cut in the sale of tea to the public. March of Trivia gets a cross-section of the man in the street opinion to drastic tea reduction order. An ex-senator says,
I'm framing a bill to take the T out of the alphabet.
Are you putting another letter in its place?
Yes, the letter V. V for victory.
Well, how will your victory alphabet go, Senator?
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, V, U, V, W, X, Y, Z.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. The hostess at a popular Park Avenue tea shop reports...
We have stopped serving tea entirely.
You are serving a substitute?
Tea customers are now getting a cup of hot water and smoked glasses.
Thank you very much. A popular songwriter says...
I'm rewriting the lyrics of Tea for Two. I'm cutting down 50%.
Well, how does your new version of Tea for Two go?
A tea for one and one for tea. No tea for you, but there's tea for me.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. An unknown actor... An unknown actor who has been affected by the tea reduction is Sir Bibbum Bush. Well, what happened, Sir Bibbum?
This blasted tea rationing has closed my play. Lord Bellwether's Dilemma.
Lord Bellwether's Dilemma? Well, how could tea...
Well, you see, in the play, I was cast as Cartwright the Butler.
Cartwright the Butler?
Yes. At the end of the third act, Lord Bellwether returns, you see. He's been out on the moor, frogging.
frogging on the moor, Harry.
But as Lord Bellwether enters the conservatory, he finds the governess beheaded on the divan, his wife dying on the floor, and his son lying on the mantel with a bolo knife through his pullover.
A bolo knife through his pullover, eh?
Mm-hmm. Lord Bellwether adjusts his monocle.
Yes.
He calmly surveys the carnage.
Yes.
He turns to me and he says, "Cartwright, a cup of tea."
"Cartwright, a cup of tea."
Yes, I serve him the tea. Quick curtain. Bravos, applause, absolute din, oh boy.
Fine.
And then came this blasted tea rationing. At the last minute, I had to find another drink. I made a most unfortunate choice.
Well, what happened, Sir Bibham?
We came to the third act.
Yes.
Lord Bellwether said, "Cartwright, a cup of tea."
Yes.
I came on holding a Pepsi Cola.
And?
The house cat called. Quick curtain. The play closed.
Well, that's too bad, Sir Bibham.
I said, "Oh, boy, do you mind if I trickle off?"
Not at all.
Trickle, 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 trickle.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Sir Bibham Boy. A mystic who has had a bit of difficulty with the tea, a seeress, rather, who has had a bit of difficulty with the tea situation is, what is your name again, madam?
Princess Shirley Lazanga.
Princess, you tinker with the tannic occult, do you, Princess Lazanga?
For 20 years, by Shapiro Samovar, I am reading tea leaves.
Shapiro Samovar. Well, do you tell fortunes by appointment, Princess?
Only with the blue plate special.
Oh, I see.
With the 35-cent dinner, I am telling you nothing. Princess Lazanga is only waiting on you.
Oh, only waiting with the... Well, but with the blue plate special...
While you are eating the meat, I am looking into the future.
Uh-huh, and?
I am not only predicting dessert... I am also predicting love, marriage, and divorce.
Fine. Well, tell me, with the tea rationing, are you giving digest readings?
Princess Shirley Lazanga is going all out.
All out for defense?
All out of Shapiro Samovar.
Oh, I see.
Yes, today I am predicting by Moskowitz's delicatessen.
You are a fortune teller in a delicatessen?
Why not? I am raising noodles.
How on earth can you read noodles?
Comes a customer. He is ordering noodle soup.
Mm-hmm.
The soup off the top he is zipping.
Mm-hmm.
I am looking on the noodles and giving a reading.
Well, isn't it difficult reading noodles?
It's monotonous. Every fortune is the same.
Why, Princess?
For a customer eating by Moskowitz's delicatessen, their future is holding only one thing.
Success?
Indigestion.
Moskowitz crabs their style, and thank you, Princess Lazanga. And now a man who has no problem with the tea rationing is Ladislaus Franz. Tea doesn't bother you, eh, Ladislaus?
Let me, brother. Let them cut out all the drinks they want. I'm all set.
You don't drink anything?
Only milk, brother. I bought a cow.
Do you live in the city? Where do you keep your cow?
Where else? In the apartment.
You keep a cow?
The landlord's nearsighted. He thinks it's a St. Bernard with gland trouble.
Oh.
When me and a wife is like a glass of milk, I just pull one of them little handles under the cow, we got milk.
And, this system is working out okay, is it?
We got more milk than we can use in a lifetime.
Well, how do you mean?
For 2 months, I've been drawing from only one of them little handles under the cow.
I see.
The other three are as good as milk.
Oh, the other three. You're holding your cow for a long pull, and thank you, Ladislaus. Well, that about exhausts...
Hark an instant, Mountebank. Falstaff's here to cut a plank.
Falstaff, Openshaw, not you.
The muse and I have just checked out of the Y.
By request. You haven't been composing again.
Have you heard, "She had dishpan hands, and I was a Basin Street boy"?
No, I haven't.
Or, "I waved to my darling Beulah as they dragged her away to the cooler"?
No, I haven't heard.
in there. Put down that jukebox, Mother. You're too old to carry a tune.
Now, wait a minute. Done it. That is the last straw, Openshaw. Tonight, it so happens that we have been discussing the tea shortage.
Precisely why I am here. I have written a poem.
What is your tea poem called?
My Little Bag and Me.
How does it go, Falstaff?
When the cares of the day seem too heavy to bear, do I rant, do I fume, do I tear out my hair? No. I hie me to a tea shop, to the nearest one I go, and I get myself a pot of tea, oolong, or perhaps Pekoe. I pour my own hot water, I dunk my bag of tea, and there I sit in solitude, my little bag and me. Through many a crucial crisis, when fate had us up at three, we've sat and thrashed our problems out, my little bag and me. But today there came an order from the WPB. It says we all must cut in half our daily use of tea. It means breaking up our friendship to keep our country free. We're glad to make this sacrifice, my little bag and me.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, and now we turn to greet Kenny Baker, paying his tribute to the Easter season. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight Kenny sings Easter Parade, Mr. Al Goodman conducting Easter Parade. Deceive me is Larry Elliott.
Yes, Fred, with a message for the millions of new drivers in America today.
Oh, wait a minute, Larry. How can there be millions of new drivers when there aren't any new cars?
Why, every motorist is a new driver now, Fred. Even those who've been driving for years.
Astro Goodman has just played Zoot Suit. Mr. Goodman only had time to play a fragment of the cloth. We're a little rushed tonight. And
Mr.
so.
Mr. Howard!
Well, Portland. Hey, you look mighty snappy tonight. Is that your new Easter outfit?
Yes, it's a Victory Ensemble.
Well, how do you mean?
The dress is so long, you can't see defeat.
Well, I could say very good, but I'd only be lying, so I'm not going to say very good. Aren't the very is a word that could be used in connection with another word that might go after it. Aren't the sleeves a little too long?
Yes. The man didn't have time to alter the dress.
Well, why not?
Just as Mama paid him, a policeman came up, and the man had to leave with his push cart.
A push cart modiste? Is that where you did your shopping?
The man told Mama he was working for Macy's.
And he had a pushcart full of dresses?
Yes. He said he was a fresh air fiend, and Macy's let him take his counter out in the street.
Oh, yes. They're very nice that way if you want to take your counter out. Well, he should have shortened the sleeves.
Oh, the sleeves are all right. My arms aren't long enough.
Well, you can get them pulled out later in the day. Well, oh, hello, Kenny. I didn't see
well,
you.
Well, how do you like it, folks?
Oh, is that your new suit, Kenny?
Yes, sir. Some garment, eh, F.A.?
Now, wait a minute. Wait till I get used to the glare, Kenny. You blinded me there for a minute.
It looks like a sunset with sleeves in it, doesn't it?
It sure is loud, Kenny.
It looks like an antipasto with lapels on it to me.
Where did you get your suit, Kenny?
Well, I was walking along Canal Street, and a man was lying outside of a clothing store. He must have fainted because he was mumbling.
Mumbling what, Kenny?
Well, he was mumbling, "Help, help, carry me into Sam's Tailor Shop. Now having a big Easter sale." Down come prices. No suit in stock over $16.95. Hurry, carry me in.
And?
Well, he was lying on the sidewalk, so I carried him in.
So?
The minute I got him inside Sam's, he came to and locked the door. And who do you think it was?
Who, Kenny?
It was Sam.
Well, what happened?
Well, the next thing I knew, I was pinned against the wall looking at suit.
Well, how did you happen to pick that slice of Technicolor you have on there?
I got a canoe paddle with it.
Oh, well... All right, break it up, kids. We have a guest to welcome.
Oh, who's coming tonight?
Victor Mature.
Oh! Victor Mature!
Now, stop shaking, Portland. We went all through this with Tyrone Power. Now, you and Kenny beat it. Mr. Mature and I want to be alone.
Gosh, I'd like to be you for 10 minutes, Mr. Allen.
Well, never mind that. Go and see if the bulb on your Easter lily lights up. Do something. Now, ladies and gentlemen, 3 weeks ago we brought you Tyrone Power. Tonight we bring you another candidate for the movie fan's choice for Mr. America, Hollywood's one and only Victor Mature. Now, wait, Brother, we were expecting someone all women describe as a beautiful hunk of man.
Well, nobody ever called me beautiful. I guess you could call me a hunk.
Yes. You look like a bundle for Bellevue. You're certainly not Victor Mature.
No, I'm Victor Moore.
Victor Moore. You see, we had the same trouble here 2 weeks ago. We were expecting the Quiz Kids and Reggie Gardner showed up. Tonight we're expecting Victor Mature. We get Victor Moore.
What has Victor Mature got that I haven't got?
Well, nothing, but somehow he has it better arranged. Victor. Victor Mature has a wasp waist.
Well, what's wrong with this sunken double chin I've got here?
It looks like you rolled out the barrel and then put a vest on it, didn't it?
Well, I'm sorry if I won't do, now, Mr. Allen.
Wait. Oh, please, Mr. Moore, don't go. We've got to have a guest star tonight.
Well, do you think you can use me?
Well, you'll be better than nothing.
That's what the man at the draft board said this morning.
What were you doing at the draft board?
The man on the door had his glasses off, and he pulled me in.
Well, what happened when you got inside?
He put on his glasses and threw me out.
Well, this is all mighty interesting, Mr. Guest, tonight. We'll have... Now, what could I ask you?
If I was born...
That's a little late. Then that's an interview.
Well, why don't you ask the leading question?
Well, how...
Well, as a young boy at the door...
Yes.
I went in.
Yes.
I went in.
Yes. What happened then?
Everything went black. Everything went black.
And when you came to?
Everything was still black. I was with a minstrel show.
Well, what happened when you washed up?
I played in vaudeville for 30 years.
And after 30 years in vaudeville, what did you have?
A tight tuxedo.
What did you have?
A tight tuxedo, a pair of spats, and
malnutrition came Broadway. And your hit shows, a V.I.
That's right. And now V.I. thing, I was Vice President Alexander Follow-Bottom.
Well, after years, what is your opinion of the office?
It's oblivion with all expenses.
Well, what were some of your other roles?
Well, and leave it to me, I was ambassador to Russia. I got out of Russia in 1940.
Well, a certain paper hanger probably wishes he had gotten out with you. Your last show was Louisiana Purchase. You were a senator in that.
That's right. I've been a senator, an ambassador, and a vice president.
You've had quite a political career on the stage.
Yes. Other actors audition for parts. I have to campaign for mine.
Well, doesn't it get monotonous, Vic, playing nothing but politician parts?
You bet it does. Someday I'd like to play a romantic part. Just once I'd like to wear a sweater.
A sweater? Aren't you stretching your imagination a little?
I'd probably stretch the sweater a little, too. But I'd sure like to pull the wool over my eyes.
Well, perhaps you'll get your wish. You know, the way they do things out in Hollywood, Vic, you'll probably end up in a sarong.
I don't think so, Fred.
Why not?
People might mistake me for Mature, but not L'Amour.
Well, tell me, how did you like Hollywood when you were out there making Louisiana Purchase at Paramount?
Well, I found out one thing in Hollywood, Fred.
What?
I'm too fat to wear slacks.
Well, why?
Men were always coming up behind me and saying, "Pardon me, sister."
Tell me, Vic, did you live lavishly out there in Hollywood? Did you live like Orson Welles, you know, pawns roaming around the living room, live elephants for bookends?
No, I lived simply just 20 servants and a xylophone player to work the doorbell.
Did you have a big house with a game warden at every mouse hole?
No, I just had one of those little bungalows. The backyard was a racetrack.
Oh. You had a swimming pool, of course.
Oh, I had a little puddle out the back of the house. But I was afraid to use it.
Well, why?
The Navy had it mined.
Well, now, I don't like to bring this up, Vic, but while you were out in Hollywood, were you set upon by any of the glamour girls?
Well,
I hate to brag, friend. I thought so. You had an affair or two, you sly boots.
What
happened?
Well, the first day I was in Hollywood, I was sitting in the Brown Derby.
Yes.
And a strange woman tried to pay for my lunch.
A strange woman tried to pay for your lunch?
Yeah, and she got away with it, too.
What did you do?
Well, you know how it is. I had a station wagon, and her feet were sore.
And?
Well, one thing led to me taking her home. Well,
what did you do when you delivered her home?
I got her a seat.
Did you ever see her again?
Oh, yes. Well, they started keeping company.
Well, tell me, how serious did it get?
Well, she let me wear her Wilkie button. I let her wear my Elks suit.
You did, huh? Well, who was this girl, Vic? Rita Hayworth?
No. It was Edna May Oliver.
So you and Edna May Oliver were that way, hey?
Yeah, we kicked it around a little while I was out there.
Did you hit zeros in all of the high spots?
No, the air conditioning brings on Edna May's arthritis.
Well, what did you two do for excitement?
Well, some nights I'd go over to Edna May's with my Parcheesi board.
Yes.
And some nights she'd bring her knitting over to my place. The light was better.
Oh, the light was better, sure.
I'd heat up a little Ovaltine.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd take our shoes off and bump toes.
Hey, love. Well, I hope you and Edna May will be very happy.
I don't know. John Barrymore tells me she's fickle. But love will find a way.
Oh, how true. Well, now that you're back in New York, you're going to stay a while?
No, Fred, I got to go back to Hollywood.
You mean you can't resist that California climate? Is that it?
No, there's nothing like New York climate for me.
I know. You've got to get back because you like pictures.
No, there's nothing like the New York stage.
Is it the people out there?
No, give me New Yorkers every time.
There?
No, give me New Yorkers every time.
Then what has Hollywood got that New York hasn't got? Well,
Edna May Oliver.
That's right, I forgot. The glamorous, effervescent Miss Oliver.
Gosh, Fred, the way you say it.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Moore. The telephone. Hello? Yes? Yes, he's here. Oh, it's for you, Mr. Moore.
For me?
Yes.
Oh, hello? Oh. You just got into town, huh? You want me to go out and cut a rug? Okay, sugar. I'll meet you in front of the Stork Club. I'll be wearing my patent leather wedgies. The Vi-Hot stuff.
Dick, you're not stepping out tonight.
Say, you won't mention anything to Edna May, will you?
Your secret is safe with me, Vic. Who is she? Oh, come on. Who is this hot bundle you're taking out tonight?
May Robeson.
May? Ladies and gentlemen, ever since Kenny Baker has been on the air, it has been his custom each Easter to pay fitting tribute to the day by singing Schubert's Ave Maria. Tonight, as Easter Sunday comes to a close, we are happy to again present Kenny Baker singing for you Ave Maria. sure. Say, Jimmy, did you want something?
Yes, it's time for me to do my stuff, Fred.
Well, not yet, Jimmy, or 8 minutes early.
Oh, your watch must be wrong, Fred.
Well, I had the jeweler take it apart and clean it only yesterday.
Maybe put the wrong parts back. Let me see it, will you? Well, these hands are the same. Dial is the same. Ah, here's the trouble. This spring is different.
Jimmy, how can you tell from the outside that this spring is different?
The Texaco Star Theater continues in just a moment when Fred Allen returns to present Victor Moore and this week's winner in the Texaco College Talent Competition. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. WABC, New York.
And you are listening to Radio Vault on WHFR. This is Radio Vault, Radiothon 2025 Pledge Edition. Go to our website at whfr.fm to make a pledge or give us a call at 313-845-9676. Option one. We'll talk to you soon. Let's continue with Fred Allen.
Meet Duquesne's most talented undergraduate, Miss Charlene Patricia Posgay. Well, congratulations, Charlene, and from Hello Duquesne, we welcome you to our high octane midst here.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. It's nice to be back in New York again.
Well, I'm glad that you have been here before, Charlene.
Why, Mr. Allen?
Well, most of our student winners are visiting Manhattan for the first time, and of course, I generally ask them about their sightseeing, but you've seen everything here, I imagine, and so tonight, then, you can tell us about Pittsburgh. What is Pittsburgh like, Charlene?
It's a wonderful city, Mr. Allen. The Duquesne campus overlooks Pittsburgh's famous Golden Triangle. In the distance, you can see the Monongahela and Ohio rivers.
You can see that far in Pittsburgh?
Sure, why not?
Boy, I thought the air in Pittsburgh was so smoky, when the sun came out, it looked like the eight ball. I have even heard that the ceiling was so low in Pittsburgh, the little boys on pogo sticks were grounded most of the time.
Someone has been exaggerating, Mr. Allen. My freshman year. I'm taking...
Freshman seniors.
I guess that was...
Hey, Charlene.
Well, the contestants were drafted. And another one of the boys got a job playing with Stokowski.
Stokowski? Yes, Charlene. They were... Stokowski. You know how Mr. Goodman hates to play with Stokowski?
Really?
Mr. Goodman played leapfrog. If you see today, Stokowski, 200 musicians, he acts with his hands. Mr. Goodman, relatives with instruments here. He can't get them to...
Mr. Pagum, a concert of...
You are studying musical education, Charlene. Do you want to teach music, Charlene? Do you want to teach music? Be realized, Charlene.
Thank
you. Our team last year, didn't it?
Yes, that's ball. Coach Denelli made for Wednesday night.
Uh-huh.
It's games on Saturday.
I get it. We've got to take two beatings and one thing against me.
Oh, no, present you with this Duquesne monogram sweater from our monogram.
Oh, a sweater, and it's beautiful, Charlene. Uncle Jim looks like Bloomingdale's basement here. Now, just hold it up. Well, this is going to be fine. I know you don't play football, Charlene. What activities do you participate in about the campus?
I'm one of the singers in the Duquesne Tamburitza Orchestra.
Tamburitza? I've heard of the Schnickel Fritz Band. What is a Tamburitza Orchestra?
Our orchestra plays the music of the Slovenian and Croatian people.
And the Tamburitza is the authentic instrument?
Yes, Mr. Allen. And the Duquesne Tamburitza Orchestra wants you to have this Tamburitza as a gift.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you, Charlene.
Incidentally, Mr. Allen, the Tamburitza Orchestra is playing in South Chicago tonight, and they stopped their program to listen to your...
Well,
program.
I wish I had time to play the Tamburitza for them tonight, Charlene. This looks like a mandolin that never had a chance, doesn't it? I'd like to stop and play Deep in the Heart of Texas, but I'd only take it off the hit parade, so I won't bother with it. Would you like to have me play for your song? I'll get my pick, Charlene.
Well, before I sing, Mr. Allen, could I talk to Portland?
Why, certainly. Portland?
Yes?
Charlene wishes a word with you.
Yes, Charlene? Portland, on behalf of the Duquesne chapter of the Future Teachers of America, I would like to present you with this key and scroll of membership and this bouquet of flowers.
Thank you. I am greatly honored, Charlene.
Charlene, you are really Lady Bountiful tonight. A sweater, a tamburitzer, and now you've made Portland a future teacher. Posterity will be a race of morons, I'm afraid. Uncle Jim should have been born an octopus. I mean, you don't realize what you have done tonight.
I have one more gift for you, Mr. Allen. This is from the Epsilon Eta Phi fraternity.
Gosh, a basket with two Easter eggs in it. Isn't that? Look at that.
Yes, the large egg is inscribed to you.
Oh, so it is. That's swell.
The same egg also has an inscription. The small egg also has an inscription.
Ah, yes. Let me see. This egg laid in Waukegan by... This is a museum piece, Charlene. And I want to thank you, the Duquesne Monogram Club, and the Epsilon Eta Phi fraternity for your kindness tonight.
And I want to thank the Duquesne Chapter of Future Teachers, too, Charlene.
And I guess that brings us to your vocal presence, Charlene. What song have you brought us as your gift?
I'd like to sing A Heart That's Free.
Fine. Ladies and gentlemen, Duquesne University's most talented undergraduate, Miss Charlene Posgay, sings A Heart That's Free.
Is the song of a heart that's free.
Fellow students, the faculty, and the Duquesne University alumni may well be proud of your appearance here tonight. And all of us here in the Texaco Star Theater wish you every success in your musical career. Now, next week, ladies and gentlemen, the most talented undergraduate of Buffalo University at Buffalo, New York. After hearing the three finalists over station WKBW in Buffalo, the student body voted, the ballots have just been tabulated, and the winner is Dean Stathicus. Congratulations, Gene. We'll be looking for you next Sunday night. And, oh, say, Kenny, you look upset. Anything?
Yes, I'm worried about my Aunt Maggie.
Oh, has she had an accident?
Well, not yet, but my uncle's going to tie my Aunt Maggie onto the fender of his car.
The fender of his car for what?
Save tires. My uncle says the wear on each tire is different, see? And Aunt Maggie weighs 300 pounds, so he's going to have a ride over each wheel in rotation until its five tires wear even.
Or your Aunt Maggie needs a retread job. The Texaco Workshop players. Tonight they star Mr. Victor Moore in a burlesque of one of radio's great institutions, the Free Advice Program. This epic is called Forum for the Forlorn or Sobby Lobby.
Friends, good evening.
Forum for the Forlorn is conducted by radio's beloved advisor on personal problems, Rodney Allen. And here is the man who will solve each and every problem. That's Solomon of Sorrow, radio's mother, father, brother, and sister, Rodney Allen.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you. And good evening, friends. Tonight, again, our studio is crowded with frustrated little people from all walks of life who are here to tell us their problems entirely unrehearsed. And now, our first case.
906, this young lady, Mr. Allen.
And your case, sister. Open your shawl, sister. Let me hold that safety pin. There, that's better. Now that your shawl is open, sister, open your heart.
In love with two fellas.
And, what is your problem, 906?
Well, I got $200.
And you are madly in love with two fellows?
Yeah. One fella is a racing trout.
Racing trout?
He wants me to lend him the $200 to play a horse.
Well, what about your other friend?
The other fella is a part-time felon. He's in jail.
And this part-time felon...
He wants me to take my $200 and go his bail.
And you're madly in love with both of these fellows?
Yeah, that's my problem. What should I do with my $200?
My advice to you, little lady, is to give your $200 to the horse player. Let him put it on a horse. If the horse wins, you will have enough money to bail out your other boyfriend.
But what if the horse loses?
You will have another problem. I shall be happy to settle that problem for you. And now,
Mr. Allen.
Yes, Milton?
This next gentleman in line has no number.
This bewildered-looking character wearing the burlap pajamas, the seersucker bathrobe, and the birch bark moccasins?
Yes.
Pardon me, sir.
Who am I? I must be somebody. What's my name?
Well, I'm going to try to help you, brother.
Who am I?
We'll find out who you are.
Have you ever seen me before?
No.
Then how do you know it's me?
Well, I don't. I'm taking a chance. Who are you?
That's it. Who am I? I must be somebody.
It looks like an amnesia victim, Rodney.
Yes, if we only had a clue, Milton. Brother, can't you give us some clue?
Is there any fire coming out of my head?
No.
Then I can't be Superman.
No. You don't even look like Clark Kent. Now, if you just sit down, I'll help you after the program.
Right this way, sir.
But who am I? I must be Superman.
Friends, this poor unfortunate character has wandered into our forum for the forlorn wearing burlap pajamas, a seersucker bathrobe, and birch bark moccasins. You may recognize that timid voice. If you do, please call this studio. And now...
Case number 804.
Yes, beaten one. What is your dilemma?
I formerly worked in a bank. I got $18 a week, and I wasn't happy.
Why? Why weren't you happy?
On $18 a week, I couldn't go no place. I couldn't do nothing.
This made you unhappy?
Yes, sir.
Proceed.
One day, I stole $87,000 from the bank. And I quit my job.
I see.
Today, I'm out all day going to the racetrack, playing bingo. Nights, I'm catching shows, going to nightclubs.
And are you happy?
I'm happy while I'm enjoying myself. But when I go home at night to my duplex...
Yes?
I get to thinking about the $87,000. My conscience bothers me and I'm unhappy.
And your problem is?
Should I go on enjoying myself with this tainted money and be an unhappy part of the time?
Yes.
Or should I go back to work in a bank and be unhappy all of the time?
There is no substitute for honesty, son, and my advice to you is to give up this life of pampered luxury and ease.
Yes, sir.
Go back to that bank tomorrow morning. Put on your alpaca jacket and you go back to work as though nothing had happened.
Yes, sir. And should I mention the $87,000 I stole?
Not unless they mention it to you.
Mr.
Yes?
Paul, I? I must be somebody.
Yes, you are somebody. If you could only give us a clue, brother.
I didn't drive up here in a fire engine, did I?
No.
I can't be Mayor LaGuardia.
No. No, he's taller than you are.
If you'll only help me, I'll pay you back. I'll give you half of anything I've got.
Well, what have you got? Nothing. Now get away from here. Get away.
You're the only friend I've got.
Now beat it, bum. Sit down behind that screen there.
All right, but who am I?
Please, friends. Please, if you recognize this faltering voice, if you are to help a poor, unfortunate soul, call this studio. This man not only has amnesia, he may have a problem. I may be able to help. Come in.
Excuse me for interrupting your program, Mr. Allen.
Well, who are you, friend?
I'm Kramer from the Board of Missing Heirs. We're next door, broadcasting from the studio.
Yes, Kramer.
One of our missing heirs got away.
One of your missing heirs is missing?
Yeah, we located this man we believe to be Ronald Spiewak this morning in a flop house. We told him his brother, Jock Spiewak, the fly swatter king, had left him $2 million. He fell back in his bunk and hit his head on a cement pillow.
Yes?
I picked him up and he didn't know me.
His mind was a blank?
Yeah, we brought him to our studio tonight to give him the $2 million. The program had just started. I looked around. Ronald Spiewak had disappeared.
You didn't give him the money?
The Board of Missing Heirs can't give him the $2 million until he identifies himself.
There was something in the will?
Yeah, the two Spiewak brothers had a code word.
I see.
The will demands that I say Filigadusha.
Filigadusha?
If this man says Shinamarusha.
Shinamarusha.
He is Ronald Spiewak, Jock Spiewak. Brother, have you seen this little man, Mr. Allen?
Was he wearing burlap pajamas, a seersucker bathrobe, and birch bark moccasins?
Yeah, yeah.
Your problem is solved, Kramer. Sitting behind this screen, you see?
Ronald Spiewak! I'm glad to know you, Mr. Spiewak, but who am I?
Try your cold words, Kramer.
Good idea, I will. Listen, Ronald.
Yes?
Filigadusha. Filigadusha.
You bet, but who am I?
His mind is another blank.
Let me try, Kramer.
Yeah, go ahead.
Listen, Ronald, listen closely. Rose O'Day, with Filigadusha.
Shinamarusha.
Shinamarusha, that's it!
Let's try him again, Kramer, to make sure. Filigadusha, Ronald.
Shinamarusha!
Filigadusha!
Shinamarusha! That's Jock's code word. Now I remember.
You remember what?
I'm Ronald Spiewak. My brother Jock left me $2 million. I'm rich.
Filigadusha!
Shinamarusha!
You're Ronald Spiewak, all right. Congratulations, Ronald.
Where's the money?
$2 million. Gad, this is a lucky day for all of us.
Say, wait a minute, buddy. Who are you?
Ronald. You haven't forgotten me, your friend and counselor, the man who brought you out of the darkness into the light.
I never saw you before in my life.
But Ronnie...
Get away, bum. You bother me.
Raving, Ronald. I will stand by you. I shall be at your side from now on.
Who needs you? What I need is wine, woman, and song. Although I'm a little too old to sing. $2 million! Whoopee!
But, Ronald, you promised to give me half of anything you own. You owe me $1 million.
I owe you $1 million?
And don't forget your inheritance tax.
Inheritance tax?
50%. That's another $1 million.
You mean I get $2 million?
Yes, Ronald.
And I owe $2 million.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here, put down that microphone.
Gad, Rodney, he's knocked himself unconscious.
My $1 million. We've got to bring him to, Kramer. Slap him.
Yes, Ronald. Ronald.
Oh.
Wake up, Ronnie.
Oh.
He's opening his eyes.
Ronnie, Filigadusha, Ronnie. Filigadusha. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I guess that closes our Star Theater for tonight. I want to thank you for joining us this evening. Next week, our guest will be Kay Kaiser, Man About Students, and the winner of the Texaco College competition at Buffalo University, Dean Staphicus. This is Fred Allen saying goodnight for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast, inviting you to tune in again next Sunday night. And remember, you're welcome. Good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Celebrating the station's 40th birthday later this year, WHFR welcomes all of you loyal listeners to Radiothon 2025. This is Rob Campo, WHFR Operations Manager, and this week it's our annual Listener Support Pledge Drive. To make your donation, give us a call at 1-800-585-4322, extension 9676. That's 1-800-585-4322, extension 9676. Or call 313-845-9676, option 1 for our broadcast studios. That's 313-845-9676, option 1. You can also pledge your support online. Just visit our website, www.whfr.fm. That's www.whfr.fm. And click the Donate to WHFR button at the top of the page. And thank you for your support of WHFR Dearborn and our mission of making waves.
Thank you, Rob. With two B's, no less. Friends and neighbors, you are listening to Radio Vault on WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported non-commercial radio, because of you, we're still here after 40 big years. We just heard the Fred Allen Show, Texaco Star Theater is the technically correct name of that show. Originally heard way back on April 5th of 1942. That one was a little bit, little scratchy and rough, but some of these shows are like that. Once again, as you've been hearing, this is Radiothon Week. All week long, we're inviting you to help us to keep on keeping on. You could do that one of a few different ways. One of the most popular ways is simply to just go to the website and we have a donation option there. Secure and painless. Just go to whfr.fm. Pull down the Donate Now menu. Select any amount. Now, we have got some cool stuff this year that we haven't had in previous years. This is all kind of in celebration of our 40th year. If you're a first-time pledger, pledging $40 or more, you get an additional gift, kind of a surprise, too. Could be a mug, a hat, or a shirt, or an umbrella. One of our WHFR CD releases or something else. You just never know. Just $40 will get you there. And you can go to the website to donate. Once again, WHFR.fm. There's no com or no EDU. Just WHFR.fm. Put that in your browser and pull down the Donate Now menu. And the website will take you from there. Or, of course, you can call the studio. Even better, right? You get to talk to this guy. 313-845-9676. Option number one to get to the studio. 313-845-9676. to make a pledge and show your appreciation for Radio Vault and all the other shows that come your way here at 89.3 and WHFR.FM. So what do we have coming up for our final hour today? Well, we aim to please today. We are going to be taking a listen to a Lux Radio Theater episode. Now, Lux Radio Theater is the show that they actually took real movies, real motion pictures at the time, and turned them into radio scripts. Now, I don't know how they did that. Combined like a two-hour movie into a 60-minute radio show with no pictures, but that's what they did because they had talented writers. That's how they did it. So we're going back to April 5th of 1940. No, I'll take that back. May 12th of 1941. And this is a legendary radio show that was on CBS for about 20 years or more, all the way into the 1950s, starting out in the 30s and running into the 1950s, sponsored by a detergent called Lux. How about that, right? You won't hear the Lux commercials because we are commercial free. So let's listen to Craig's Wife from May 12, 1941.
Lux presents Hollywood. The Lux Radio Theater brings you Rosalind Russell and Herbert Marshall in Craig's Wife with Beulah Bundy. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Cecil B. DeMille. Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight's play, Craig's Wife, will probably remind all drama critics that women are unpredictable. For though the critics praised the drama when it opened on Broadway, they all added wisely, the women won't like it. But the unpredictable ladies loved it. A few months later, George Kelly's play won the Pulitzer Prize, then went the way of all hit plays and became a hit motion picture. Tonight you'll hear the same fine actress who played Craig's Wife on the screen, Rosalind Russell. And co-starring with her, we present a longtime favorite of this audience, Herbert Marshall. Just why the critics thought women wouldn't like Craig's Wife is a little hard for me to guess. It's an honest play, and in my opinion, women admire honesty in drama as well as in husbands. It's the story of a woman who made the fatal mistake of letting love come second. And that's very unusual for a woman. And here's a story in figures that I hope is not unusual. Ordinarily, figures make pretty dull reading. But we got a real thrill out of these in a letter from a calculating woman, the only kind of calculating woman we like. And now, a rising curtain spells the beginning of tonight's play. Here's the first act of Craig's Wife, starring Rosalind Russell as Harriet Craig, Herbert Marshall as Walter, and Beulah Bundy as Miss Austin. This is the living room of Mrs. Craig's house. Like a room in a shop window, it's cold, austere, and beautiful. A room meant to be admired, but not lived in. Its hardwood floors are too shiny. The drapes hang in much too perfect folds. There are no ashtrays, for Mrs. Craig discourages smoking in this room. It's like the other rooms of the house, in that it reflects the excellent taste and the fanatical neatness of its mistress. At present, Mrs. Craig is not at home. But as if anticipating her immediate return, two maids are feverishly dusting the spotless furniture.
Do you think I ought to dust the top of the fireplace, Mrs. Harold?
Now, Maisie, you know better than that. Just dust every square inch of this room.
But it don't need it, Mrs. Harold.
Just the same, do it. If there's a speck of dust, she'll find it.
Mrs. Craig never looks where I have dusted. She always looks where I ain't. And even if I have...
Maisie, don't touch that vase.
What's the matter?
Put it down. Put it down. You know she can't stand for anybody to touch that vase except herself.
I just wanted to dust up here.
Well, don't ever touch that vase. If it ever got broken, she'd raise the roof. Here, put the newspaper on the table in the hall. That's where she likes it.
She's too fussy. Paper says more rain tomorrow. Mrs. Craig won't like it.
It may not be raining in Albany.
I wonder how her sister's getting along.
If you ask me, she's pretty sick. Mrs. Craig would never leave here in a million years if she didn't have to.
Say, Mrs. Harrell, didn't you used to work out on Willis Avenue one time?
For 2 years, yes. Why?
Did you know any people out that way by the name of Passmore?
I don't think so. Why?
Well, it says here in the paper that they were both found dead this morning in their home.
Good heavens. What happened to them?
It says, a fashionable Willis Avenue resident scene of double tragedy. Bodies of J. Fergus Passmore and wife socially prominent in this city found dead in home from bullet wounds. Cause of death shrouded in mystery. Police working on identity of gentleman visitor seen leaving premises in automobile shortly after midnight.
How awful.
I wonder if Mr. Craig knew him.
Probably. Passmore. Now that I come to think of it, I'm sure I've heard him mention that name.
You want to hear more?
No, we haven't time. It'd be just like Mrs. Craig to walk in on us before we're done with the work.
I thought you said she wouldn't be back before Saturday.
That's what she told me before she went up to Albany. But it's just as well to keep a day or two ahead of a woman like Mrs. Craig.
But the house is clean, Mrs. Harrell. There ain't a pin out of place. There never is.
If Mrs. Craig gets an idea there is, sick sister or not, she'll take the first train home. Get to work.
Aunt Harriet.
Yes, dear? What's the matter?
Aunt Harriet, I hope I'm doing the right thing.
Of course you are, Ethel. Your mother's had heart attacks before and come through them all right. She'll do the same thing this time.
But I should be there, Aunt Harriet. Suppose something should happen.
Nothing's going to happen, dear. The doctor certainly didn't think it was so serious when he suggested you come visit me. And I certainly wouldn't have left my only sister if I thought anything was going to happen. I do have to get back to the house, but just the same, I would have stayed there as long as it was necessary.
But there were some things I wanted to tell Mother.
Were they important?
Well, it was about Professor Fredericks at school. Mother met him and liked him very much. She said she'd be glad if I married him. I wanted to tell her.
You mean he said something?
Yes. He's asked me to marry him soon.
I don't know why your mother should be so panicky about your future, Ethel. You're only 19.
She said she'd like to feel that I have somebody.
Well, why does a girl need anybody, dear, if she has money to get along on? I wouldn't allow your mother's apprehensions to rush you into marriage, unless, of course, it were an advantageous marriage. Did you accept this man when he asked you?
Practically, yes.
But how does he expect to support you on a professor's salary? He's very lucky if he's getting $200 a month. Unless he's some very extraordinary kind of professor.
He's a professor of the romance languages.
Naturally. And I suppose he's told you he loves you in all of them.
Well, I certainly shouldn't care to think about marriage at all, Aunt Harriet, unless I were at least in love with a man.
Oh, that's just your age, Ethel, darling. We all pass through that. It's the snare of romance. You'll find out later it's nothing more than the most impractical sentimentality.
Why, Aunt Harriet?
Unfortunately, the majority of women are caught with the spell of it. And then they're obliged to revert right back to the feminine dependence and subjection they've been trying to rid themselves of for centuries.
Well, you married Aunt Harriet.
But not with any romantic illusions, dear. I saw to it that my marriage should be a way toward emancipation for me. It isn't financial independence that I speak of particularly. I knew that would come as a result of another kind of independence. And that's the independence of authority over the man I marry.
I don't understand what you mean, Aunt Harriet.
I mean that I'm simply extracting my share of the bargain. Your Uncle Walter wanted a wife and a home and all the things that go with marriage. Well, he has them. He can be sure of them. But I want to be sure of them, too. And someday I will be.
But how?
By securing into my hands the control of my husband.
But suppose they were to find out sometime.
Find out? Find out what?
That you wanted to control him.
One never understands, dear, what is not in one's nature to understand.
Oh, Ethel, I know you're mentally deploring my lack of nobility.
No.
Yes, you are. I see it in your face. You think I am a very sordid woman.
No, but frankly, Aunt Harriet, I don't think it's quite honest.
But it's very much safer, my dear, for everybody. If a woman is the right kind of woman, it's safer that the destiny of her home be in her hands rather than in her husband's.
Oh, how do you do, Mrs. Craig? You're back ahead of time.
Hello, Maisie. Yes, a little. Will you take these bags, please? Put my niece's things in the corner room. She'll be with us for the next few days.
Yes, ma'am.
Take your things off, Ethel, dear. Maisie, I wish you'd use the back way when you go up and down stairs.
Oh, I always keep forgetting that.
That stairway will begin to look as the way it did before, with everybody tramping up and down it every 5 minutes.
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Craig. I see you're back.
Hello, Mrs. Harold. This is Ethel Landreth, my niece.
Pleased to meet you.
How do you do? Aunt Harriet, I think I'll go upstairs and rest for a while. You don't mind?
Of course not, child. Don't forget, dinner's at 7.
I'll be down before that.
Well, Mrs. Harold, everything been all right while I was away?
Everything's fine, Mrs. Craig.
Who moved that vase?
Why, it was moved in the dusting.
Mrs. Harold, you know perfectly well I gave orders that no one was to touch that vase.
Yes, ma'am, I know, but...
Well, will you please see that it is not moved again? Where did these roses come from?
Why, Mrs. Fraser brought them over.
Mrs. Fraser?
The lady across the street. She brought them over for Mr. Craig's aunt.
Well, you'd better take them out of here. The petals will be all over the room. Is Mrs. Fraser upstairs with Auntie Austin again?
Yes, ma'am.
And how did she happen to get up there?
Well, I don't know, I'm sure, Mrs. Craig. Unless Miss Austin asked her.
Oh, all right. Have there been any letters or messages for me, Mrs. Harold?
Why, there were two letters, yes. I left them in your room. And there's a gentleman called Mr. Craig last night about 8 o'clock, but he'd gone out. I gave him the telephone number where Mr. Craig said he'd be.
Who called Mr. Craig? Did you get his name?
Yes, ma'am. He said his name was Berkmeyer.
What number was it Mr. Craig gave you last night?
Why, it was Levering 3100. I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget it.
All right, Mrs. Harold, that'll be all. Oh, wait. Tell Maisie to fix the latch on the screen door. It was half open when I came in.
I will, Mrs. Craig.
Information.
Hello. Could you give me the address of the telephone number Levering 3100?
I'm sorry, I don't have that information.
Oh. Well, it isn't important. Thank you very much.
Harriet, where are you?
Hello, Walter.
Oh, I saw your grips on the porch.
Oh, dear, hasn't Maisie taken them up yet?
Darling, it's wonderful to see you. When did you get in?
Careful, Walter. Don't muss my hair. We came a few minutes ago.
How is Estelle? Better?
Oh, nothing more than usual. You'd have thought from her letter that she was dying. So I have to race up to Albany and leave the house for a whole week. Incidentally, I brought Ethel back with me. She's upstairs resting.
Oh, well, that's nice. Well, I'm glad to have you back again, darling.
Oh, stop it, Walter. You'll break my bones.
That's what I think I'd like to do sometimes.
Now, stop it, please. Here, take your hat and put it there where it belongs. And take your paper out of here, too. The room's a sight. Your aunt's company will be scandalized.
All right. Has Auntie Austin got some company?
The Lady of the Roses across the street.
Mrs. Fraser?
Yes. She's getting very sociable.
She certainly has some beautiful roses over there. I've talked to her a couple of times on the way up from the garage.
You mean she's talked to you?
Now, just what do you mean by that?
Walter, don't lean against the piano. You'll scratch it.
My... His coat won't scratch it.
Well, there might be something in your pocket that will.
All right. What do you mean about Mrs. Fraser?
Isn't it obvious?
Well, now, don't tell me you're jealous, darling.
Oh, not at all. I'm simply suspicious of middle-aged widows who specialize in wayside roses.
I'd like to be able to see just what's going on in your mind, darling.
Well, if you could, I dare say you'd find something very similar to what's going on in the minds of most of our neighbors these days.
Our neighbors?
They have eyes, Walter, and they use them. And I wish you'd use yours. And I also wish you'd tell me whose telephone number Levering 3100 is.
Fergus Passmore, why?
Oh. Mrs. Harold told me you gave her that number in case anybody wanted you. And I was wondering where it was.
Fergus Passmore's. I was playing cards out there last night, a little poker.
What did Billy Berkmeyer want you for?
Oh, Fergus told me to get a hold of him, too, and bring him along.
I hope you're not going to get into card playing again, Walter.
Why, I never gave up card playing.
Well, you haven't played in nearly a year.
Well, I suppose that's because you don't play. I don't believe Fergus would have asked me yesterday, only that I happened to mention that you were away.
Was his wife there?
Yes, she was for a while, but she went out.
I suppose that's the reason Fergus asked you, wasn't it?
What do you mean?
Well, you know how insanely jealous of her he used to be.
I'm sure he was never jealous of me.
Oh, he was jealous of everybody, from what I could see.
I'm sorry you have to go so soon, Mrs. Fraser.
Here she comes.
It's almost dinner time. I really must.
I'm getting out of here. I don't want to have to sit and listen to her.
Why, Harriet, I didn't know you were here.
Hello, Auntie Austin. I only got in a little while ago.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Craig.
How do you do? I haven't even unpacked yet. Will you excuse me? Maisie, will you bring up the grips, please?
Mrs. Fraser, I think my wife's a little upset.
Of course. Miss Austin told me about her sister. I'm so sorry.
You'll come again sometime, won't you?
I'd love to. Goodbye, Mr. Craig.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Miss Austin. Goodbye, dear.
And I think it was time I came back, Auntie Austin. From the looks of things, if I'd stayed away much longer, I'd probably have found my house the thoroughfare for the entire neighborhood.
You mean Mrs. Fraser being here today?
You know perfectly well what I mean, Auntie Austin. How did she happen to get in here?
Why, I asked her in, of course. She brought over some roses.
And you walked right into the trap. Oh, I do wish Maisie would learn to keep those drapes straight.
Why do you think Mrs. Fraser is so anxious to get in here, Harriet?
For the same reason that a lot of other women in this neighborhood want to get in here, to satisfy their vulgar curiosity. I'll not allow it. Let them tend to their houses, and they'll have plenty to do. I don't want a lot of idle neighbors on visiting terms.
A good neighbor is a very good thing sometimes.
You may have them. I don't want them running in and out every time I get my back turned.
None of them has ever run in or out to you, so far as I remember.
Well, she was just in my house, wasn't she?
And your husband's house.
Well, she was hardly here to see my husband. Or was she?
No, she was not. Although you'd try to make Walter believe it if you could. Mrs. Fraser was here to see me, your husband's aunt. And I don't believe Walter would appreciate your attitude if he knew it.
Well, you'll probably tell him.
I have a lot of things to tell Walter, Harriet.
I've no doubt you have.
I've had plenty of time to think about them during the past 2 years, up there in my room. I'm going to tell him, and I want you here when I do, so that you won't be able to twist what I say.
I merely want you to understand that I resent your having Mrs. Fraser in my house.
Oh, why pick on Mrs. Fraser? Be honest about it, Harriet. You don't want anybody in your precious house.
I don't want her.
You don't want your husband. Only that he's necessary to the upkeep here. If you could see how that could be managed, his position here would be no more secure than that pillow there.
That's a very nice thing for you to say to me.
It's the truth, whether you like to hear it or not. You want your house, Harriet, and that's all you do want. And that's all you'll have at the finish unless you change your way. Remember this, Harriet Craig. People who live to themselves are generally left to themselves.
Does that mean that you're leaving us, Auntie Austin?
Yes, I'm leaving. Only before I go, I want Walter to understand why.
What's the matter?
Auntie Austin tells me she's going to leave us.
It's nothing very new, Walter.
Why, what's happened? What did you say to her, Harriet?
I haven't said anything to her, of course.
Harriet...
She's simply using her imagination.
You never say anything. You simply act. And then you leave it for us to interpret, if we're able.
Well, I hope I'm open to conviction if you have a grievance.
It isn't my own cause I'm going to plead. I won't be here. It's for you.
I don't understand what you mean, Auntie.
That's probably the greatest danger, Walter. You don't understand. If you did, it would be scarcely necessary to warn you.
Of what?
Your wife.
What are you laughing at, Harriet?
Oh, now, don't you think that's very amusing?
Harriet isn't really laughing, Walter.
Well, what am I doing, crying?
You're whistling in the dark. You're terrified your secret has been discovered.
Really? And what is my secret?
I knew it a long time ago, Harriet. Long before your outburst against Mrs. Fraser a few minutes ago.
She means I've been trying to poison you secretly, Walter.
Not so secretly.
Well, I'm sorry I must go, because I'm sure this is going to be very amusing.
Harriet, I wish you'd stay around to have something to say against you. I think it's only fair...
I'll not stay and listen to a lot of absurdities. I hope, Miss Austin, that when you finish discussing me,
You'll be as frank in letting Walter know something of what I've been putting up with during the past 2 years.
I wish you'd tell me what's happened, Auntie.
That isn't so easy to tell a man, Walter. It requires a bit of elucidation. To begin with, nobody could like Harriet. She doesn't want them to.
I like her.
You're blinded by her, as many another man has been blinded by a beautiful woman.
But what has she done?
She's left you practically friendless, for one thing. She's made it perfectly clear to all your friends by a thousand little gestures that they are not welcome in your house, because this is her house. It isn't yours, Walter. You merely went with the house as a sort of regrettable necessity.
Now, you don't really mean... You can't mean that, Auntie, not can you?
Walter, don't you realize that none of your friends has been here for 18 months? Why? Because she's a supremely selfish woman. She wants to exclude the whole world because she can't impose her narrow little order on it.
I can't believe that. Harriet has her faults, yes.
Walter, why do you suppose your appointment as director at the bank failed to go through?
Well, I...
Because Harriet insulted Mr. Littlefield's wife right here. I saw her do it.
Auntie Austin...
I saw her. And let me tell you something else I heard. I was having luncheon at the Colonnade, and a man and his wife came in and sat down near me. Immediately, she began to tell him how he should have sat and how he should sit and so on. At the table right near my elbow, I heard someone say, "Listen to Craig's wife over there."
People are talking about us?
Of course. Your friends resent being told where they shall sit and how. So they're avoiding the occasion for it just as I'm going to avoid it. But you have to deal with it.
How should I deal with it?
Make your wife realize that there's a man of the house here and that you are that man.
Auntie Austin, I can't be convinced that there isn't an enormous element of misunderstanding between you and Harriet. We can thrash this whole affair out somehow.
No. No house is big enough, Walter, for two women who are interested in the same man. I must go. I'm not happy here.
What will you do if you leave here?
What I've always wanted to do, travel. I want to see things and places and people so that I'll never become little. Oh, I have such a deadly fear of that after these past 2 years.
But I promised Mother that you'd always have a home with me.
You haven't a home to offer me, Walter. You have a house with furniture in it, that's all. I have the impression when I look at these rooms that they're rooms that have died and are laid out.
Well, whatever they are, they'll seem less if you leave them, Auntie. I don't think I'd feel worse if it were Mother herself who were leaving.
Be glad that it isn't your mother, Walter. She would have left long ago.
Good evening. Is Mr. Craig in?
Yes, sir, he's in. Shall I have
him? Hello, Billy, how are you?
Hello, Walt. I've been trying to get hold of you since 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Huh? Well, come in. What's on your mind, Billy?
What about it, Walt?
About what?
About Fergus and his wife. Haven't you seen the papers?
No. Why, what's happened, Billy?
Fergus and his wife are dead.
What?
Why, it's in every paper in town. Here it is in the front page. Read it.
Dead? This is horrible.
I saw Adelaide myself last night. I stopped in for a drink, and there she was with that fellow she'd been going out with.
Dead.
I have a hunch Fergus had heard of the affair and called her on it when she got in last night. You know he was jealous of her.
Oh, this is terrible. I think I ought to get in touch with the police right away.
Well, that's why I wanted to get hold of you. It says in the paper they're looking for a man seen leaving the house after midnight, and I thought...
Of course, that must be me. I'll call the police.
Well, now, wait a minute, Walter. What about your wife?
She's back. She'll probably read it sometime.
Well, if she doesn't see the papers, what she doesn't know won't hurt her. And this thing might clear itself up overnight. I think the wise move is to get over to Passmore's. And if they don't know anything more there, go to police headquarters and let them know where we're at.
Come on. Through the park will be quickest.
Yes?
Dinner's ready, Mrs. Craig.
I'll be right down. Will you tell Miss Landreth?
Yes, ma'am.
Fashionable Willows Avenue residence, scene of double tragedy. Bodies of J. Fergus Passmore and wife.
Passmore!
Walter, are you downstairs? Walter!
Mrs. Craig, dinner is...
Maisie, where's Mr. Craig?
Why, he was here with a gentleman.
What gentleman? Who was he?
I don't know who he was.
Did Mr. Craig go away with him?
I guess he must have.
He might be in the garage. Run out and see. Tell him to come back. I want to see him.
Yes, ma'am.
Right away. Hurry, Maisie! Hurry!
After a brief intermission, Mr. DeMille and our stars Rosalind Russell and Herbert Marshall will bring us Act Two of Craig's Wife. We pause now for station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. Act Two of Craig's Wife, starring Rosalind Russell as Harriet Craig and Herbert Marshall as Walter, with Beulah Bundy as Miss Austin. Ten minutes have passed, and Mrs. Craig waits anxiously for her husband to return. Nervously, she paces the length of her immaculate living room, the newspaper clenched tightly in her hand. The newspaper telling of the death of her husband's friends. Suddenly, the telephone rings.
Hello? Yes? Long distance? All right. Hello? Yes, this is Mrs. Craig. Oh. Why, Ethel is lying down just now. Who is this speaking, please? Oh, Mr. Fredericks. No, she's quite all right, really. Well, I'd much rather not call her, if you don't mind. Well, can't you tell me what it is you want to tell her? Oh, I see. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Fredericks. I don't care to disturb her just now. Goodbye. Maisie, the door.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Craig in?
No, sir. He's not in just now.
Oh, his wife in?
Yes, sir.
Who is it, Maisie?
We'd like to speak to her for a minute, if we could.
Yes, sir. Will you just step in?
Thank you.
It's two gentlemen, Mrs. Craig.
Good evening.
Oh. Are you Mrs. Craig?
Yes, I am. That will be all, Maisie.
Yes, ma'am.
Have you any idea what time Mr. Craig will be in?
Why, I'm expecting him any minute. Is there something I can do?
Yes, I think so. We thought we'd like to speak to Mr. Craig first, but I don't suppose it makes a great deal of difference. It's about the Passmore shooting affair.
Oh, yes. Yes, I've just been reading about it.
Huh?
Isn't it a dreadful thing?
Well, it's rather a peculiar case. Of course, it could have been a foiled attempt at robbery, but that doesn't explain certain other conditions.
Are you working on the case?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I'm Captain Cattell from headquarters. This is Lieutenant Grover. Evening.
How do you do?
However, there's no connection between that and our visit here.
Well, I'm very glad to know that.
Of course, we do have to follow up any little outside clue. Now, a man was seen leaving the house shortly after midnight, but it was too dark to establish any identification. Besides, that wouldn't account for the death of Mrs. Passmore. You see, she didn't get in until after 3:00.
I see. Then you think Mr. Craig might be the man that was seen leaving there last night?
Oh, no. That possibility is really not being seriously considered. You see, a house of that description might have had any number of visitors during the evening.
That's very true.
But you see, Mrs. Craig... We had a report from the telephone exchange that there was a call made from here this evening asking for the address of Mr. Passmore's home.
You mean that somebody called from here? I can't imagine who it was.
The report says it was a woman's voice.
Well, that's very extraordinary. It could have been one of the servants, of course. Oh. Merely curious, I suppose. However, I dare say there's some very simple explanation of it. If the call was actually made from here.
Has the telephone been used at all, to your knowledge, Mrs. Craig, since 5:00 this afternoon?
No. Oh, yes. I just answered a call a few minutes ago from Northampton.
I see. Has anyone from the outside been in here since 5:00 this afternoon?
No. That is, except a neighbor from across the street. I scarcely think she would have used the telephone, though. I can ask Miss Austin, my husband's aunt.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to question everyone here. Oh, first, though, I'd like to call headquarters.
Oh, go right ahead.
Thank you. Did you know Mr. and Mrs. Passmore, Mrs. Craig?
Oh, no. I mean, I could hardly call it knowing them. I'd met them, of course, but I haven't seen either of them for ages.
I see.
Hello, Mrs. Cattell. I thought I'd better call and check with you, but... What? Oh, well, that's good news. I'll be right down.
I'll get Miss Austin for you.
Oh, no, it won't be necessary, Mrs. Craig. I've just had word that additional information has come in at headquarters. It looks like the case is just about ready to break.
Walter! Walter, is that you? Where have you been, Walter?
Out with Billy Burke by a wire.
Come in and shut the door.
Why, what's the matter, Harriet?
Walter, what do you know about Fergus Passmore and his wife?
I don't know any more about it than you do, Harriet.
I've been nearly out of my mind for the last half hour. I couldn't find you anywhere. Why didn't you call me then and not go rushing out of the house?
I didn't want to upset you.
But I certainly couldn't have been any more upset than I have been. I thought probably you'd been arrested or something.
What would I be arrested for?
Why, in connection with the Passmore thing, of course. The police are looking for you. You know that, don't you?
Who says the police are looking for me?
Two detectives just left here not half an hour ago.
What do they want?
Doesn't it say in the paper there that you were seen leaving Passmore's at 12 o'clock last night?
Doesn't say that I was seen leaving there.
Well, who else could it have been but you? You were out there playing cards, weren't you?
Yes, of course. Did they say they knew I was out there last night?
I don't remember what they said exactly. I was too upset. I was never placed in such a position in my life. I didn't know what to say except that you'd be back soon. Where did you go with Birkmeyer?
Over to Fergus's house.
And what in heaven's name did you do a thing like that for?
Well, why not?
Well, do you want your name dragged into a thing like this, Walter?
My name will be dragged into it anyway, won't it?
But you don't have to go rushing out to meet a lot of scandalous publicity. I should think your own common sense would show you what it would mean to have your name even mentioned in a thing of this kind. Why, it would be in every newspaper in the country.
That wouldn't bother me in the least, Harriet. My conscience is clear.
Oh, don't be so absurdly romantic, Walter.
It isn't a question of being romantic.
No, and it isn't a question of conscience either. It's simply a matter of discretion. If you had nothing to do with this thing, what's the use of becoming involved?
What do you mean, if I had nothing to do with it?
Oh, don't start picking me up on my every word. And don't smoke in this room. There are plenty of other places in the house to smoke, if you want to smoke.
I don't know where they are. Did the detectives say when they'd be back here?
I don't know whether they did or not. But if they do come back, Walter, don't give them any more information than I did.
Well, I certainly won't deny that I was a friend of Fergus Passmore.
You don't have to deny that you were his friend, but you certainly don't have to submit to a lot of cross-examination. Let them go cross-examine some of Fergus's other friends.
Did he say he'd seen any other of Fergus's friends?
Walter, I don't know. I told you I was upset. I hardly know what they said.
I think I'll call up Birkmeyer. They might have gone over there to see him, too.
Wait a minute, Walter. Don't.
Then why not?
You can't call him now.
Well, why not?
Don't you realize the telephone is being watched? And that the police are probably watching Birkmeyer's, too? The first thing they do in a case of this kind is to watch the telephone calls in and out of the house.
Not from this house.
I mean from Fergus's house.
I wasn't going to call Fergus's house. I was going to call Billy Birkmeyer.
What difference does it make, Walter? Do you think the police can't put two and two together? Birkmeyer called you last night at Passmore's, didn't he? And there's undoubtedly a record of that call.
Well, that wouldn't involve my name.
It would if the operator listened in.
Do you suppose she has nothing to do but listen in on calls?
Well, she listened in on this one, didn't she?
On which one?
What? What did you say?
Which call did you say the operator listened in on?
I don't know which one she listened in on. But someone must have listened in on something, or the detectives wouldn't have come here.
Didn't they say when the call was made?
What does it matter when it was made? The fact remains that our telephone is undoubtedly being watched now.
Well, I want to know why it's being watched.
Listen to me, Walter. Put down that telephone. I will not allow you to drag my name into a notorious scandal.
Harriet, I've got to find out where I am in this thing.
If you speak over that telephone, I'll leave this house.
What do you mean, you'll leave this house?
I mean exactly what I say. I don't want my name associated with a thing of this kind.
Your name?
Oh, ours, of course, both of us.
But suppose something developed that would reveal the fact that I had been to Passmore's last night. Wouldn't it be better for me to be open and above board from the beginning? They're bound to be suspicious if I'm not.
There are grounds for suspicions, Walter.
What grounds? The fact that I was over there last night doesn't mean a thing.
It isn't for me to determine the degree of your guilt or innocence. I'm not interested.
You're not interested?
I am interested only in the impression on the popular mind and the respect in the community we've got to live in.
You mean you'd rather know I was involved in this thing and keep the respect of the community than know I was a victim of circumstances and lose it?
Mrs. Craig, are you going to have dinner now?
All right, Mrs. Harold. We'll be right in.
Mrs. Harold, just a minute.
You're not questioning the servants in front of me, are you?
I am.
I won't stay here.
That's up to you, Harriet.
Did you want to speak to me, Mr. Craig?
Mrs. Harold, do you know if anybody has called Levering 3100 from this phone today?
No, sir.
You didn't have occasion to call that number, did you?
Why, no, sir. I never even thought about it until Mrs. Craig asked me for it.
She... All right, Mrs. Harold, thank you very much.
Walter, it's about time you got back. Where did you go?
I've been out walking.
Walking? I don't suppose it makes any difference to you that we held dinner for over half an hour. Walter, answer me.
Harriet, that call today.
Well?
It was you who made that call, wasn't it? What were you doing, checking up on me?
Don't flatter yourself, Walter. The man hasn't been born yet that I'd bother checking up on.
Why didn't you tell the truth?
Because I anticipated an attack of your romantic conscience.
You were playing safe at my expense.
I knew the necessity of it. I knew if I told you I made that call, you'd be on the telephone in 5 minutes telling the police.
I intended doing that anyway.
You silly fool.
That's why I went with Billy Berkmeyer to police headquarters.
Oh, you...
And the only reason I didn't tell them then was the man in charge of the case wasn't there. I'm going to see him tonight, and I'll tell him then.
You can tell him that I'm leaving you,
Harriet,
too.
Harriet, why weren't you at least honest with me? Not try to make it appear that I was responsible for this thing. It's you that the police are looking for.
Oh, you needn't try to turn on me. They wouldn't be looking for either of us if you'd stayed at home last night, instead of being out card playing with a lot of irregular people.
What was there irregular about Fergus
Passmore? There must have been some irregularity, or this thing wouldn't have happened. Oh, I knew as soon as my back was turned that you'd be out visiting your friends again. You wouldn't be visiting them had I been here.
How'd you stop me? Lock the door?
It wouldn't have been necessary. You haven't been visiting your friends in the last 18 months, have you?
Then you have kept my friends out of here.
If I have, the end justified the means.
My aunt said that you've driven all my friends away from me.
Well?
She also said something else, and I'm beginning to believe she's right. She said you were trying to get rid of me without actually driving me away from the house.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, you do. That's why you left the room before she started.
I'm sorry I didn't stay now.
You should have, Harriet. Oh, how perfectly she knows you. And I felt rather sorry listening to her. I thought she was getting a little old and suspicious. Particularly when she said you had excluded my friends. But that's just what you've done.
Oh, don't try to make yourself out a martyr. You've had your share of the bargain.
I never regarded our marriage as a bargain.
Did you expect me to go into a thing as important as marriage with my eyes shut?
I wanted you to go into it honestly as I went into it. But you've exploited me. You'd even let the police think me a murderer, just to preserve your own safety.
I've been trying to preserve my home. What else is a woman like me but her home?
Hasn't she her husband?
She could lose her husband, couldn't she? Many women have.
Couldn't she lose her home, too?
She couldn't, if she knew how to secure it.
You mean if she knew how to fix it for herself?
All right, you haven't lost anything by it. If I fix things for myself, I fix them for you, too. I haven't done anything that wasn't honest.
How would you know, Harriet?
I've simply tried to be practical. But with your usual romanticism, you want to make me appear like a criminal.
I'm not reproaching you. You simply married the wrong man.
I married a romantic fool. That's what I married.
How well we understand each other now.
Well, I understand you anyway. And you should be glad that I do. I don't know what would become of you if I didn't.
The brass of you, the presumption. What have you ever done to assume such superiority?
Now, don't get yourself into a temper.
Mrs. Harold said you wanted to see me.
I do, Maisie. I want to know why I found this card back of my vase on the mantelpiece.
Well, you see, a lady came while you were at dinner. She was collecting for some charity affair.
And you couldn't find any place for her card except behind this vase.
Well, Mrs.
How many times have I told you not to touch anything on the mantelpiece?
But I only thought...
I'm not interested in what you thought. When a girl won't do as she's told, then she'd better leave. I want you to get your things together tonight and be out of here tomorrow morning.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I'm going up to Ethel's room, Walter. I'll speak to you when you've calmed down a little.
Her house. Her precious home. Her precious vase.
Good heavens, Mr. Craig. Did something get smashed in here?
Glory be.
Her vase fell off the mantelpiece.
No, Mrs. Harold, I smashed it myself.
You... Well, I wish you'd tell her it was you that done it, Mr. Craig. She might think maybe I done it.
I'll tell her all about it, don't worry.
Yes, Mr. Craig.
Walter? Did something fall down there?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
Well, it sounded up here as though the house fell down.
Maybe it did, Harriet. I'm just sitting here wondering.
In just a moment, Mr. DeMille and our stars Rosalind Russell and Herbert Marshall will present Act 3 of Craig's Wife. Now, our producer, Mr. DeMille.
The curtain rises on the third act of Craig's Wife.
And remember this, Harriet. People who live to themselves are generally left to themselves.
Those were Auntie Austin's words, delivered in a warning to Harriet Craig. It's early the following morning, and Auntie Austin has already left the house. In the living room, where Walter passed the night sleeping in a chair, Mrs. Craig discovers her precious vase has been smashed to bits.
Mrs. Harold, what is this? Don't tell me it's that beautiful little vase.
Yes, ma'am.
How did it happen? How?
Well, Mr. Craig said...
Look at it. It's smashed into a thousand pieces.
It must have fallen on the bricks.
Oh, that never simply fell, Mrs. Harold. It's absolutely shattered. Look at the size of the pieces. Oh, that beautiful thing that I wouldn't even allow anybody to go near. Look at it now. How on earth did it ever happen, Mrs. Harold?
I don't know, I'm sure.
I suppose Maisie broke it for spite, didn't she?
No, she didn't break it, Mrs. Craig. She was out there in the kitchen with me when we heard it fall.
Well, send her in to me now. I want to speak to her.
Mr. Craig said that he broke it.
What?
Yes, ma'am.
Tell Maisie I want to see her.
She isn't here, Mrs. Craig. She's gone.
You mean she's left already?
Yes, ma'am. She left right after she had her breakfast.
Of course she did. The contemptible...
I'm leaving myself, Mrs. Craig.
Oh, are you?
I'm going this morning. I'm meeting Miss Austin downtown at noon.
Miss Austin... And where are you going with her?
Well, she told me last night she was leaving. She said she was going to travel for a few years.
And do you think it's very considerate of you, Mrs. Harold, to walk away this way without giving me any notice?
You didn't give Maisie much notice last night, Mrs. Craig.
Maisie didn't deserve any notice. She was a very disobedient girl. She absolutely refused to do what I told her.
Well, I haven't always done exactly what you told me to do either, Mrs. Craig. So maybe I deserve to go as well as Maisie.
Well, of course, you can suit yourself. But I hope you don't intend to leave without cleaning up this floor.
I've got the dustpan right here.
Where is Mr. Craig?
He's in his study, ma'am. He's reading the paper.
I'll give you your money later. I hope you enjoy your world tour, Mrs. Harold.
It'll be a change, anyway.
And I hope when you come back, you'll be able to find a place that'll be as easy as this one has been.
Don't worry about me, Mrs. Craig. Nobody belonging to me ever died in the poorhouse.
Walter, I want to speak to you. What does the paper say?
You needn't worry, Harriet. You're quite safe.
What does it say?
Fergus's brother got in last night from Pittsburgh with a letter that Fergus had written him intimating his intentions.
Then Fergus did it himself?
So it appears.
I always told you he was jealous of his wife. It's a good thing I kept my head last night and didn't allow you to telephone and make a show of us all. You can thank me that your name isn't in every paper in the city this morning.
Oh, I can thank you for more than that, Harriet. I can thank you for having given me a new name last night that fits me so perfectly that I've decided to continue its use. You called me a romantic fool.
Let's not go into all that again, Walter. I've been wanting to help you, but you don't seem to have sense enough to appreciate it.
Is that all you want before I've got to leave for the office?
No, it isn't all I want you for. I want to know about the ornament that was broken last night.
What about it?
I don't know what about it. That's the reason I'm asking you. Mrs. Harold tells me here this morning that you told her last night that you'd broken it.
So I did.
Well, you must be proud of yourself.
I was for a moment,
What were you doing, leaning against the mantelpiece again, as
no,
usual?
No, it wasn't an accident. I did it deliberately.
What do you mean you did it deliberately?
I mean that I smashed it purposely.
What for?
I became suddenly heroic. I smashed it into 1,000 little pieces, and then I smoked one cigarette after another till I had your sanctum sanctorum absolutely littered with ashes and cigarette butts. For about an hour last night, I was a pretty brave fellow around here. You should have seen me.
Are you out of your mind or something?
No. I'm particularly clear in my mind, especially I was last night. You made a remark then, Harriet, that completely illuminated me. Like a flash of lightning, I saw it all. For the first time. Unfortunately, the lightning struck my home and knocked it down. I sat here all night wondering how I might build it up again.
What remark are you talking about?
You said that a woman might lose her husband, but not her home, if she knew how to secure it.
Well, hasn't many a woman lost her husband?
And many a man has lost his life, too, because his wife has never made a sufficiently illuminating remark. I saw your entire plan then, Harriet, and my instincts called for immediate action. So, as an opening gun, I smashed the vase. And I was going to smash all the other little ornaments that you worshipped before me. I was going to rule my house with a rod of iron.
Oh, Walter, you're so romantic.
But I couldn't sustain the role indefinitely. You're right. I am a romantic fool. Now, but I do wish you could have seen my attempt to be otherwise. At least you would have appreciated my sincerity to try to continue here as your husband.
What do you mean? Your attempt to continue here as my husband?
The role is not for me, Harriet. I can only play a romantic part.
Ethel. Ethel, are you in your room? Open the door, dear. Ethel, what's the matter with you? What are you doing?
I'm packing my things, Aunt Harriet.
Ethel, what on earth is...
Why didn't you tell me that Mr. Frederick's called last night?
I didn't think it was wise to bother you.
Bother me? He thought I just didn't want to speak to him. You had no right to do that, Aunt Harriet.
Did he call again?
Yes, just before. He wants me to meet him. We're going to be married.
Well, I hope you know what you're doing.
If anything goes wrong, at least it'll be my mistake.
If that's any consolation to you. When are you going?
On the 5:10. Uncle Walter's driving me to the station.
Oh, I see.
Aunt Harriet.
Yes?
Aunt Harriet, is Uncle Walter leaving you?
What on earth ever put that into your head?
Well, when I started to come down the stairs this morning, I heard him say that he couldn't continue here as your husband.
I'm sure I haven't the faintest idea of what you're talking about.
And a while ago, when I told him I was going to be married, he said the only thing I needed to consider seriously was whether or not we had faith in each other and were absolutely honest about it.
Dear Walter.
So I was wondering if he found out.
Found out what?
What you told me coming down here on the train. And I said I didn't think you were being honest.
Don't be a fool, darling. Walter couldn't get along without me.
Ethel, are you ready?
All ready, Uncle Walter. Goodbye, Aunt Harriet.
Goodbye, dear.
Your grips are in the car. I'll be right along with you.
All right. All right, you, Aunt Harriet.
Yes, don't forget, dear. Well, Walter, you won't be late for dinner, will you?
Yes, very late, Harriet. In fact, I won't be here at all. Here's the key to your car and the garage. My house key's on the hall table.
Now, listen to me, Walter Craig. You're surely not serious about leaving this house.
I should think that decision would please you.
Well, it doesn't please me at all. It's absolutely ridiculous.
But it's so practical.
Oh, don't try to be funny.
And you've been deploring my lack of practicality for so long.
I'd like to know what's practical about a man walking out and leaving his wife in his home.
I have no wife to leave. You neither loved me nor honored me.
Well, you married me, whether I did or not.
I never saw you before in my life, Harriet. Until last night.
Well, you married me, didn't you?
And you married a house. If it's agreeable to you, I'll see that you have it, and you can go on having it, just as though I were here.
You'll be here, unless I'm very much mistaken.
You don't know your man, Harriet.
I know him well enough for that, anyway.
Oh, you knew him pretty well, I'll grant you that, particularly when you said that my mind worked very slowly.
It's working pretty slowly now. when you don't appreciate the absurdity of a move of this kind. What did I do last night that was so terrible?
You simply showed your hand, that was all.
I kept you from making a fool of yourself. That's what I did.
But you also showed me how I could keep from making a fool of myself in the future.
Well, you're certainly not beginning very auspiciously, I can tell you that.
But I shall be at least a self-respecting fool. And that's something I could never be if I stayed here. There's something in a man, Harriet, that I suppose is his essential manhood. And you insulted that last night.
Where are you going when you leave here?
That would be rather interesting to know, Harriet. Where a lot like me are going. Out of fashion, possibly. Goodbye, Harriet.
Walter. Walter! Yes?
Telegram from Mrs. Walter Craig.
Thank you. Oh.
Is there an answer, Mrs. Craig?
No. No, there is no answer. Your sister passed away at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Is anyone at home? Oh, Mrs. Craig.
Yes?
I do hope you'll pardon my walking in, but I wanted to bring Miss Austin some roses.
Miss Austin isn't here, Mrs. Fraser.
Well, if you'll just tell her I left them.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Is there anything wrong, Mrs. Craig?
My sister died this afternoon.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I had no idea she was so ill, or I'd have never come back.
I'm so sorry. I do hope you'll let me know if there's anything I can do.
Thank you very much. I don't think there's anything anybody can do. I'll give the roses to Miss Austin when I see her.
Thank you. Well, I suppose you want to be alone, Mrs. Craig. I'll just run along. Goodbye, Mrs. Craig.
Alone?
Remember this, Harriet. People who live to themselves are generally left to themselves.
Alone?
People who live to themselves are generally left to themselves.
No.
People who live to themselves are generally left to themselves.
No, no!
People who live to themselves are generally...
There you have it, a little bit of a Lux Radio Theater from 1942, May 12th to be exact, from 42. Well, guess what? Another installment of Radio Vault has come to an end, but still much more on the way. Your friend and mine, Pat Frisco, has got a special program coming up with featuring John Coltrane. In the meantime, don't forget it's Radiothon week. This whole week you can make your pledge, show your support for shows like these and many, many other shows such as the one for featuring John Coltrane coming up in just a little bit. We just heard Radio Vault, Lux Radio Theater presentation from May 12 of 1942. If you like features like that, we do it every Tuesday between 10 in the morning and 1 o'clock.
the mysteries are Sunday night mysteries between 9 p.m. and 12 midnight, right here on the station Making Waves, WHFR. And 89.3 on the FM. We're going to leave you with a little Ramsey Lewis. And don't forget to stick around for the special program featuring John Coltrane. That's next on WHFR Dearborn. See ya.
WHFR Operations Manager, Rob Campo. As WHFR prepares to celebrate our 40th anniversary at the end of the year, all of us here at the station would like to thank you, our loyal listeners. This is Radiothon 2025. Radiothon is the 1 week per year where we ask you for your financial support. But as a thank you for your tax-deductible donation, WHFR offers you a variety of gifts for different pledge levels. To celebrate WHFR going 40 years strong, your $40 pledge will earn you a pre-order reservation of our limited edition 40th anniversary poster. This cool concert-style poster will feature decades of past WHFR logos. To commemorate WHFR being born in 1985, for your $85 pledge, you will receive a pre-order reservation for our limited edition 40th anniversary t-shirt. Both the t-shirt and the poster will be officially released near WHFR's birthday at the end of the year. Have to have as much WHFR swag as possible? For a $125 pledge, you will receive both the poster and the t-shirt with our collector's combo. As Radiothon 2025 begins, we are officially 258 days away from WHFR's 40th birthday. In honor of that, your $258 donation will earn you a brass sleeve with your own custom engraved message on our WHFR family tree. This art piece hangs directly next to the main entrance of the WHFR studios and serves as a permanent reminder of all the generous donors of past and present who want to be recognized and remembered for years to come of their support of WHFR. If these all sound great, please consider donating at the $365 level. That's a dollar per day for a whole year of WHFR. As our thanks, donors at this level will receive the limited edition 40th anniversary poster and t-shirt as